interest in your community. I'm chair for tonight for this meeting. My name is Nick DeBoer. I now call the Planning and Development Committee meeting to order. Please note that assistive listening devices are available in the council chambers upon request from the clerk's office. Please ensure that all cell phones are turned off or placed on silent. Are there any members of council that have a pecuniary interest? And seeing none, the next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. I'll read out the title associated with the items on the agenda. Members of the Planning and Development Committee may ask for the item to be held so that it can be discussed further tonight. Please indicate your intention to hold the item by pressing the Request to Speak button. The first person on the list will be given the opportunity to speak to the item first. If an item is not held, the motion is deemed to be approved on consent, and no further discussion on the item will take place this evening, and the recommendation will go forward to Council at the next meeting. So we've got staff report 2019-13 regarding proposed airplane zoning regulations, Brampton Flying Club, 13691 McLaughlin Road, Ward 2. Approved on consent. Recommendations from the Advisory Committee is Heritage Caledon report dated September 10, 2018. Approved on consent. Heritage Caledon report dated November 12, 2018. Approved on consent. The notice of motion from Councillor Ian Sinclair regarding Bill 66. Okay, we'll take that, but it's the button to speak, the little red button. And notice of motion from Ian Sinclair, Councillor Ian Sinclair, regarding equestrian definitions. Okay. I will now move into the public meeting portion of this evening's agenda. I want to state there are seats in the lobby downstairs. We can't have people in the doorway for fire regulations. You will be able to hear downstairs. There are speakers set up. When it comes time to ask questions, you can come up to the door and form in a line at the microphone. But we can't have people out in the doorway there or in the lobby. Okay, and then you go down and sit down? Okay. There's one public meeting tonight on the agenda, the application for proposed official plan amendment and zoning bylaw amendment for application POPA 18-2 and RZ 18-4, 12415 Coleraine Road 5. The purpose of the public meeting is to gather input from the public concerning the application. Any members of the public who have written concerns or appeals dealing with the application being heard should be directed to the town clerk's office. Any interested persons wishing further notification regarding the application is advised to clearly print their name and address on the notification sheet outside the door. Following the presentation, members of the public will be invited to approach the podium, clearly stating their name for the public record and to provide their comments. If you have presentation material, please provide them to the council coordinator here at the front at the desk, and please note that any information submitted tonight will form part of the town's record. Following the public comments, members of council will be invited to ask questions of the presenter regarding the information contained within the presentation. Note that council members are here to listen to the comments from the public and are not here to provide an opinion or debate the matter. There will be no decision made tonight, and you will be notified of a decision, of the date of the decision, if you sign the notification sheet out front. We will now move into the public meeting of the application for the proposed official plan amendment, POPA 18-2 and RZ 18-4, 12415 Coleraine Ward 5, and I will ask Mary Nordstrom, Senior Community Planner, to confirm that notification was conducted in accordance with the Planning Act.
Yes, Chair DeBoer, notice was provided in the Caledon Citizen and Caledon Enterprise on December 20th, and mail-out of the public notice was provided to all property owners within 120 meters of the subject site, as well as those requesting notification, as well as posted on the town's website.
Thank you, Ms. Nordstrom. I want to ask, we've got a lot of people here this evening. We're going to have people downstairs. We don't, because this is a formal public meeting, We don't applaud. We don't hoot and holler. We don't do any of that sort of thing during this meeting. It is required under the Planning Act for provincial regulation that this meeting is held. It's the applicant's presentation to the community and to council. So if you can refrain from that. And I will now ask Paul Lowes, Principal, SGL Planning Design Incorporated, to begin his presentation.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, members of the public. As you said, my name is Paul Lowes. I'm representing the applicants, MJJ Developments. And I'm also here with a number of the other consulting team, Bridget Mills from BCX Environmental, and she's going to give the last slide and talk about the environmental aspects. Jennifer Meter from Terkstra Mazar Associates, Mark Howard from Gencor, who's the manufacturer of the plant, who provide the equipment, and Nicholas Sylvester of Air Acoustics for noise. So we have questions. I'll be directing questions to them if there's questions from the committee. So let me, I'm going to try and be quite brief, give you an overview. This is the site and a view of what could be built if approved. And this is from Coleraine with the office building view from Coleraine. It doesn't do it justice without the landscaping, but let me go through where it's located. The property is a long property. It's east of Coleraine. It's north of Mayfield, just south of Bolton, George Bolton. It's the second lot south of George Bolton Parkway. We see the property on this location. And for council, sorry, don't want to try and hit anybody with the laser pointer. You'll see the concentric rings that we've shown to give an idea of how far things are away as the site's in the middle of the industrial area. We have a concentric ring of 1 kilometer, 1.5 kilometers. You can see the residential area to the north is almost 2 kilometers. There's another residential area over on the Albion Vaughan Road. It's about 1.2 kilometers away. It's important to note that from a provincial guideline, and Bridget may talk about this, provincial requirements require heavy industrial facilities like this to be a minimum 300-meter separation distance from a residential area. So what's proposed is office on Coleraine, the asphalt plant to the rear of the site. This shows the site. It's 2.78 hectares, almost 7 acres. And it's a very long site of 460 meters, about 1,500 feet site between Coleraine and Simpson Road. This is a site plan of the subject site. You can see on the left-hand side is the office building. And the office building is for the site. There's another office building that's owned by the same company just on the east side of Simpson Road. The office workers will come into the site from Coleraine with a right-in, right-out. The trucks will not come in from Coleraine. They'll come in from Simpson. There's a one-way in and a one-way out for the trucks. In the middle of the site is the stockpiles for aggregates, for reclaimed asphalt, and you see the asphalt plant further to the rear of the site for council, for committee, the rear of the site in this location, and a graphic of what it looks like. This is a zoomed in of the rear of the site. You can see as well there's really three components in the manufacturer of the plant can talk a little bit more on this, but if required. There's reclaimed asphalt that goes into it. There's sand and gravel aggregates that go into it, and there's liquid asphalt cement. The sand and gravel and the reclaimed asphalt are outside in open storage. The liquid asphalt is in a series of silos kept in there, and they all go together, heated to make the hot mix asphalt, which is then stored in silos. You can see on the lines on the plan showing where trucks come in, the plant entrance, those that provide for the aggregate or the reclaimed asphalt come in and go out, those that provide the liquid asphalt cement drop it off into the silos here, those that are picking up pre-made asphalt pick it up in this location and go out. For committee, it's shown in these lines. They come in This is where they pick up the pre-made asphalt. Quickly over the fish plan and zoning, the site is designated prestige industrial. You see immediately to the site over the asphalt plan is general industrial. So an official plan is required. Office is permitted use. The outdoor storage is permitted, provided it's a small component of the site. The asphalt plant, though, requires the official plan amendment. In terms of zoning, it's right now an agricultural zoning because it hasn't been developed for industrial purposes. So it requires, for all uses, it requires a zoning amendment. And there's also site plan control that's been submitted for the public. Site plan control is, once we get through the official plan and zoning, site plan is what is controlling what the site looks like. Also important is the zoning bylaw puts some restrictions on where the outdoor storage can be located. We're proposing that, or where the asphalt plant can be located. So we've got restrictions to the open storage, 140 meters from Coleraine, 160 meters from Simpson. The asphalt plant has to be located 200 meters from Coleraine Drive and 60 meters from Simpson. This is an effort to keep the Coleraine frontage as the prestige industrial frontage, with the general industrial uses to the interior of the site. Should also note that under the site plan, we propose significant landscaping with a 20 meter on Coleraine. You see in the green, 20 meters of landscaping on Coleraine before you get to the employee parking or the office building, and on Simpson, 30 meters of landscaping on Simpson other than the exit and increase in exit. So 30 meters here, 20 meters on Coleraine. On the north and south side, the landscaping ranges from 3 to 6 meters. As I had mentioned, access to the site is two ways. For the office employees, they will come in from Coleraine. It's going to be a right-in, right-out. Trucks will not be able to access the site in this location. They have to come in from Simpson to full move access, and it's anticipated that they will then travel up to George Bolton and over to Coleraine, with in the future George Bolton and Coleraine being signalized. The transportation study looked at those intersections and determined they will operate appropriate levels of service with the increase of traffic. It's anticipated at the peak hour, worst case, if all vehicles coming in with the aggregate supply, come in at the same time as well as the trucks picking up aggregates, the worst case in the peak morning period is 31 trucks coming in and then leaving the site. So it's 62 trucks in that hour, same 31 coming in, 31 going out. But that's the worst case if they all come at that same peak hour. Otherwise, it would be distributed throughout the day. There was a noise study done by Air Acoustics, and I indicated Nicholas is here to answer any questions on it. They've looked at the noise controls, recommended acoustic barriers to shield the noise on both the north and south side by the where the aggregate storage is and the asphalt plant. They're recommending limiting sound of equipment through various mitigation measures, restriction on idling, restriction on truck delivery, and with that, they can meet the noise requirement set by the province for the nearest receptors. I'd like then Bridget to talk a little bit about air quality, and then that's our last of our presentation. Bridget?
Good evening. So we were tasked with preparing an air quality study, which was a requirement that was set out in the pre-consultation meeting that required a number of aspects be looked at. One of the aspects was air quality from health and nuisance perspective, but also a council required us to look at similar plants and compare this plant to other similar operations in Ontario, which we did. So the air quality study looked at two aspects, which was air quality from a health-based perspective, and we completed that study by doing an air emissions inventory and modeling exercise according to the Ministry of Environment requirements for doing such studies, and determined that concentrations at the property line of the facility would meet the ministry's standards. We also did a little bit of extra work where we continued the modeling out to the closest residential receptors to demonstrate how the concentrations drop off with distance from the plant. So all of that information is available in the report in tables so that you can see how the plant compares to the ministry's standards. We also looked at nuisance impacts. So one of the biggest concerns typically with hot mix plants is their potential for nuisance impacts, in particular fugitive dust and odor. So what we did was to address those potential concerns, looking to the ministry's guidance, which is to prepare detailed fugitive dust and odor management plans. Those plans are also included in the air quality study, I believe as Appendix D. So what we did with those studies is that we proactively encouraged DICON to go above and beyond what sometimes we typically put in odor and dust management plans to address what we understand to be, you know, serious concerns in the community to make sure those plans will do the job that they're supposed to do. And the other component, as I mentioned at the beginning, was to do a comparison against similar plants in Ontario and to provide a little bit of background for council and the planning team on hot mix plants in Ontario. So we identified a few things, such as, you know, there are approximately 130 hot mix asphalt plants, permanent asphalt plants operating in Ontario right now. There's another 20 or 30 portable ones, the ones that move around occasionally. And what we did was provide in one of the appendix some examples of those plants, what their kinds of separation distances were to residential communities to demonstrate that this plant is no different, if you like, than most other hot mix plants in Ontario, with the key exception that many hot mix plants in Ontario have much more significant aggregate recycling operations. So I think, as Paul mentioned, the wrap piles will not be processed. The wrap piles come in already pre-processed, so there won't be big crushing operations on the proposed site that's being applied for. Okay, so I think that was the summary of the air quality report. Thank you.
Okay.
That's the extent of our presentation.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll start with the public questions. So if there are any comments from the public, please come forward, stating your name. And if you hear something and it's the same as what you want to bring up, just to keep things moving along, not necessarily have to come up to repeat it. And like I said, refrain from applause or cheering, those sort of things. So if there's somebody wanting to bring some comments, if you're down in the lobby and you want to come up now with questions or comments, please come forward. Yep. We can form a bit of a line here, keep one or two people at the most.
Hi there. My name is Herbert Lozano. I'm representing the Sora Developments Group out of Woodbridge. We own the property at 8771 George Bolton Parkway, within a kilometer distance of the proposed development. And I'm also a resident of Bolton as well. So I'll start in terms of the comments from our company. Obviously, ourselves, we have a 200,000 square feet warehouse facility within the area. We're beneficiaries of the region of Caledon's interest in promoting business development, and we're very thankful for that. You know, I know it provides a place of employment for many people. However, we've received the notification was provided to our tenants, and that's in fact how we found out about the development. We have received comments from them. Our tenant is Sugimoto Electrical Wiring Systems. They got about 100 employees or so. To the essence that they're very concerned, to the point that you know, we have a renewal in terms of our lease coming up within the next few years, and the comments have been made that perhaps that will be a deciding factor whether they decide to renew or not. They did not anticipate to be within. They're strictly warehousing of electrical wiring systems for Hondas and Toyotas vehicles. They did not anticipate to be part of an area that is exposed to, you know, the inherent pollutants and dust. And I understand. I mean, I come from an asphalt paving background myself, all the modern technology and the requirements in terms of the ministry requirements. But besides the fact that we may have, the occasional spillage or whatever the case may be, there's also the additional traffic. I know the site on Coleraine, that 100-acre site, which we've been working for the last 3 years, has got a lot of warehousing coming in. Whether you have Mars or Canadian Tire or Amazon, we're very much in favor of that type of development, hence the reason why we appreciate the fact that this is designated as a prestige warehousing area. We're not very comfortable with the idea of changing that either through zoning or the SBA into an asphalt plant designation. We're concerned about the traffic. When you have a peak traffic of about 60 additional trucks, you're literally at times, depending on the day of the week and the time of the day, you're literally taking your life in your own hands, driving up and down on Highway 50 with the congestion that we have, primarily of a lot of industrial vehicles, a lot of tractor trailers. Adding another 60 vehicles an hour is a big concern for the residents like myself and for the people that work within the area. So to summarize, we're very much in favor of development. We just don't think that this plant is the right usage for that property, and it doesn't really enhance the prestige nature of the business park where we're located. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Paul, did you want to reply to any of the comments? Okay.
Sure.
Come forward. Just state your name for the record, and then do sign in when you...
My name is Louis Guadagnini. I'm actually a resident of Bolton. I had a couple of questions. Some of them were somewhat answered. I guess there are some restrictions on the trucks idling and coming in at night and so on and so forth. I'm just curious at what times and when the plant will be running through the days. As well, the provincial setback regulations for this type of industry, what are the setbacks? And I guess in the same breath, B, what or how far are any other asphalt plants set us away from residential areas? Those are the only questions I had.
Okay, we'll see if, Paul, do you want to provide any answers? You can do it from there, Paul. There's a microphone.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Just perfect. Keep it close.
Okay. The three questions. Plant running during the days. It's anticipated to run 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. unless there is, in some cases with asphalt plants, there's emergency if they have to respond to an MTO or regional requirement for asphalt, but in most cases 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Doesn't operate in the winter months, generally January through to March. Asphalt plants are normally closed. In terms of how close they're to be, as I indicated, the MOE requirements, now MOECP requirements, are for heavy industrial uses such as this to be a minimum separation distance from sensitive receptors, residential, of 300 meters. And in terms of other plants, probably Bridget or the manufacturer can talk. They have more experience than all the other plants in Ontario. But some other ones in the Toronto area, such as the Brimley plant, it's about 150 meters from a residential area. Passmore plant in Scarborough is about 230 meters from a residential area. The Bronte asphalt plant, QEW, in Oakville is about 500 meters. So there's a range, but there's a lot that are far closer than this plant is being proposed to a residential area. So hopefully that answers those questions.
Okay. Somebody else want to come forward for questions? Come ahead.
Hi. My name is Antonio Zambri. I live in Bolton. I'm probably one of the youngest house owner in the room, and I think I can talk on behalf of the same range of people that have invested in, like me, buying a house in Bolton and needs to protect their investments. I had a nice conversation with Bridget, if I'm not wrong, and she answered a lot of my questions. I have few concerns. Like one, which I've also asked her, it's about she showed me a forecast of the impact in terms of air quality. And I've asked her how this is planned to be kept and controlled over the years. So probably like in the first 5-6 years when the plan is very efficient, it will probably meet the numbers, but like in the next 10, 15, 25 years, when the implant, like the plan gets older and older, will it be someone like checking those numbers if the air quality impact, it stays there, if those numbers are kept there? She actually told me that only if there is a complaint from someone working there or from a resident or from anyone else. This is my first concern. The second concern, and I've seen a consultant for air quality environment in general. I've seen audio impact, air impact, but I haven't seen anything regarding our house values. What happened to the value of my house? Obviously, no one wants to buy a house which is very close to, Mr. Paul, sorry, I don't know your last name, called heavy industrial plant. I'm very concerned about the value of the houses over the years, and like now is just like the we have the freight village coming, which is good from some aspect. Sorry?
Please.
No, I'm not here to talk about this. Good for some aspect, probably not for some other people, but it's there, it's coming. This is just something adding. So I'm here to understand the impact. From what I've seen, it is good. Like there is a good study on air quality, a good study on noise and everything. But not everyone is here. Like the future buyer of my house is not here right now, and I'm sure he is not willing to understand or to see what are the numbers. He just knows there is an asphalt plant right there, and it is very close to my house or to the house that are in Bolton area and basically. So my last, and sorry, I don't want to take time to other people that want to intervene. The last concern is all the amount of traffic that we are actually putting on Highway 50. I know Mr. Paul again said it's not going from Coleraine, but the main hub of all these projects is Highway 50. So, and like, me or all the people living in Bolton have this been growing concern about Highway 50. There has been a lot of accident, fatal accident. Like I'm sure everyone is tired to like have the concern of me personally having my wife driving on Highway 50 every day, waiting for a phone call, your wife got into an accident. It's not just about my wife. It's about like people that have had wives dead on Highway 50 because of the huge amount of traffic on there. So I understand there is this growth plan for Bolton on the freight side. I actually work in the freight business. and I understand, but I think there's also needs to be evaluated an impact of the infrastructure, like the roads, the infrastructure that needs to support the plan. I know there are projects for 427 going up. I know there are projects, but those roads are not there yet. And right now we are just making like heavy traffic on Highway 50 and with big chances of accidents and whatever it comes out of it. So that's just my...
Thank you very much. Yeah, if you could just sign in on that sheet, that would be good. So it's traffic impact and the value of your house. Paul, do you want to address...
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just address the traffic to a bit. In terms of local traffic immediately at the intersections around, that's been studied. In terms of traffic further afield, one thing about an asphalt plant is when the trucks pick up the asphalt, it needs to be delivered within 30 minutes to 60 minutes because it's hot and it has to be laid hot. So that restricts where they, how far afield they go. So this is really looking at the Peel area, a little bit in Vaughan, is where the trucks are going from this facility. They will be going wherever that asphalt is needed, not necessarily on Highway 50. So we don't think of these as heading down Highway 50, going down to Toronto. It's limited in terms of an area because it has to get laid in a certain quick period. So they're trying to avoid the traffic. So that's what we need to keep in mind of. Most likely they'll probably be going further over in Peel, Brampton, Mississauga, that area, north part of Vaughan is where they'll be heading.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, just last thing.
Yeah, very quickly.
Very quickly. Where is not a question, it's just a hypothetical question. Where is the benefit for people like me that pay taxes in Caledon area to have this plan in our area? Like, I don't see personally any benefit for none of the people here. And I don't know, like probably in terms of progress, you might have studied something, but like I see like a good thing behind a freight village, even if it's very small.
We want to stay on this topic, please.
But yes, yeah, I'm just making comparison. But I don't see any good thing behind an asphalt plan.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Thompson and councillors. My name is Ruth Wheelwright. I'm a resident of Caledon. I'm also a builder. And we build an awful lot of buildings in the Prestige Industrial Park in Bolton, all along Par Boulevard between Simpson and Coleraine. And we spend an awful lot of money, and I spend a lot of time here at the town offices getting our buildings built, and we're extremely proud of the buildings we do build. And we really like building in prestige industrial parks. But now we're going to have an asphalt plant in a prestige industrial park. Now, like my friend from Sora, I'm not against an asphalt plant. We need one. Just not there. It's the wrong part of Caledon, and my clients spend an awful lot of money buying the most expensive property in the town of Caledon, and you're lowering the property values by changing it from prestige industrial to not, whatever the new designation is. So I'm not against an asphalt plant. I understand, like I'm a builder. We all need asphalt. You know, unfortunately, there are going to be trucks on the road, and that's development, so I understand all of that. I just wish that this facility was not in the most expensive real estate in all of Caledon.
Okay, thank you very much. We have next speaker. Joe, where'd you go? Oh, okay. Yeah, state your name and then sign in when you get a chance.
Yeah, no problem. My name is Tanya Riglieri, and I'm here representing Mars Canada tonight. Mars Canada has been a proud member of the Bolton community for over 30 years. We respectfully wish to express our concerns regarding the application of an official plan amendment and zoning bylaw amendment that would allow the construction of an asphalt plant on Coleraine. The proposed site for the asphalt plant is at 12415 Coleraine Drive, which is only 300 meters from the Schenker distribution facility that we utilize at 12315 Coleraine Drive. Schenker currently acts as a distribution center for a wide range of Mars Canada products, along with raw materials supporting our factories producing pet food, rice, and chocolate. Also, the proposed asphalt plant is across the street from the new 890,000 square foot warehouse facility that we've planned. The new facility would involve investment of $100 million, and following a $77 million expansion of our food plant just last year, this represents the latest investment by our company in the Bolton community. The production of asphalt is known to release toxic fumes. Mars Canada products, in particular chocolate, could absorb odors and flavors from emissions discharged from an asphalt plant. Similarly, fumes could be absorbed by our packaging material and diffused into our products. Despite product wrapping, asphalt production also creates toxic dust, which contains heavy metals, which poses a risk to handling wrapped products. Our products may also absorb airborne chemicals emanating from the facility, which could impact the health of our consumers. The International Agency of Research for Cancer has issued a statement classifying occupational exposures to straight-run asphalt cement and related emissions during road paving as possibly carcinogenic to humans. In summary, the proposed location of an asphalt plant so close to the Schenker, as well as our new warehouse investment, could have an insurmountable and detrimental impact on our business operations in Bolton and in Canada. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns today.
Thank you very much. If you want to share, no, we don't applaud. Thank you. If you want to share the written comments with the.
I have notes on them. Can I send you something?
Okay. Is there next speaker? Please come forward.
Hi, my name is Sarah Valente, and I just want to formally bring forward a petition that was online. We have approximately 1,200 signatures of people that are opposed to changing the zoning. I'm going to be short and sweet. I just want to read something I found on the Town of Caledon website. The Town of Caledon prides itself on maintaining a balance of community, environmental, and developmental initiatives in the setting of an extensive urban and rural environment. The town has taken a progressive approach to green leadership, working to preserve Caledon's natural beauty through sustainable lifestyles and development. The town is actively working to live up to its title of the greenest town in Ontario, which is an award that we received. So just leaving it there, we can't fathom how an asphalt plant can align itself with this award.
Okay, thank you. If you want to leave it with the clerk here. Did you sign there? If the next speaker can come forward, please.
So, my name is Arun Goyal, and he's Mr. Sandhu. We are neighbors. I'm right on the south side of the asphalt plant, which is being proposed here. So, and he's a resident. He lives in a residential property right across the street. I want to address the concerns that we have as of today. This plant will create dust and air pollution in the area where we live and work. We have young children and families in the area, and we spend time in outdoor activities, which includes sports, gardening, and other activities. This plant will be emitting foul fumes and dust that's going to cause serious impact on our health and living. Next point that I have is the emission from the asphalt plant is going to cause serious medical issues, including cancerous living and work environment, and will not be tolerated by anyone living in the vicinity. The plant will cause serious impact on properties that we own, and it is negatively impact the valuation of the real estate. This depreciation of value will cause serious dent on our wealth and future retirement plans. The emission from the asphalt plant will continuously pour over plants and other livestock in the area, and will seriously impact ecological balance, vegetation, purity of subsoil water in the area. Traffic of trucks carrying asphalt will increase on Coleraine Drive, causing road risk in front of our properties. So this is from the residential side. Now, my property is right on the south side of this lot, which is being proposed as an asphalt plant. We have an outdoor storage yard of stone, and fumes from this plant is fumes and dust from this plant is going to fall on the product that we store outdoor, and it is going to impact the value and our operations. So we strongly oppose the plant coming in this area. And this lot is zoned for Prestige Industrial for a reason. We should not allow it to go to be used for outdoor storage.
Okay. You're the Global Arch.
I'm the Global Arch. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. If you signed in, that would be good. If you don't got information that you want to share and leave behind, that's good.
We have same letter. We
yep. Yeah. And if you want to share, leave your written information behind, that would be good. The next person wants to step forward, please.
Hi, Rodrigo Crovati, North Hill. I'll keep this nice and short. Everybody's talking about the big general questions and concerns. I'm also concerned, but I appreciate the big packet of information, lots of good detail. My question is, when I look through it, I haven't been able to look through it in much detail, but every concrete example of the study that you give us, how do I understand how you guys perceive the specific data? For example, the easy example is the amount of trucks during peak hour. I mean, it's much harder for me to understand the smell and all the parts per million, all that. But even that example, we say, okay, 40 trucks during peak hours, this is our projection. My criteria would be no trucks. But, of course, I don't want you guys to think I'm the unreasonable guy. But what do you guys use as the standard? And, for example, if we come back 6 months for another plant and we say, you know what, this study assesses very good data and basically another 40 during peak hour, how do we know when enough is enough? Because basically I am concerned about the trucks, and I just want your feedback about how do I make more out of these reports that you give me to understand how to be objective, what you guys see as okay, and then maybe me thinking about, you know, I don't agree.
Well, the reports actually go through staff, and in most cases we have peer reviewers that review some of the information. The region also comments on these applications with regards to traffic and their services. And the conservation in some cases comment to it. I don't know if they're a commenting agency on this application. They are not. But staff will review all the documentation the same as you do and interpret it from that. If you do have questions or want to know more information, I suggest that you contact the planning department directly and speak to staff about it.
Correct. Because we all see the three trucks and the three lanes, and now we're going to have six trucks on the three lanes kind of stacking up. At one point, we're going to have to say, you know what, it's not looking very good. Unless you guys come back and say, okay, we're expanding this road. We're expanding 427. It's finally coming around.
Yeah, and the region is working on expansion plans throughout, and those are things that your counselors will share with you as they happen. So we won't have that information tonight, but as staff review all of the information, just like you are doing, just as the comments here tonight, we'll make more questions for them and ask for probably some more information, then you'll be able to get it. But if you do sign that sheet, you will get information sent to you, the one behind you there with your contact information.
Okay, right there, perfect.
That's the way for us to communicate to you, and you can also contact the planning staff to talk to the lead planner on this if you have specific questions too.
Thank you.
On those reports.
Thank you very much.
Please come forward.
Good evening. My name is Joe Grogan. I'm a resident of Bolton. Have lived here for many years, since 1975. I'm totally opposed to this particular proposal. In October, I attended the briefing session at Caesars. I collected from over 35 people in attendance their remarks as to why they were in opposition to this particular proposal.
Speaking to the mic, Joe, because we do record it, please.
In October, I attended the meeting at Caesars Palace, at which I received from numerous people, at least 35, their concerns as to why, they opposed this particular proposal. On January 2nd of this year, I dropped off at the planning department of the town of Caledon a copy of a note which I had sent previously, summarizing those particular concerns that people had said to me in confidence. I dropped off that in the planning department. I dropped it off in the mayor's office. I would like to know why that package of material that I provided for this particular meeting was not included in the package for this particular meeting. Instead, what we have is three or four pages as represented here. I'm very concerned about that in terms of accountability of the town of Caledon.
Your comments would probably come, and Peggy can correct me, but your comments will form part of the final report, not necessarily the report here tonight, because the final report is what this information tonight feeds into, as well as the comments that you had brought before.
So, Nick, you know I've been here before. Yes. In September of 2012, I made comments to this particular town council at that time in regards to the Canadian Tire proposal. The documentation that then came out after that did not represent any of the comments that I made. It was like the comments went into a black hole. I'm very concerned about that kind of stuff happening with the town of Caledon. The other thing I'd like to mention is, where are the scientific studies that have been referred to here by people on behalf of the proponent? There's binders, I presume, that are here, but where is that information on an individual basis for the residents of Caledon who will be affected by this? I'm very concerned about the fact that there are going to be more trucks that are going to be going to and from this particular facility, just like the 780 to 800 trucks weekly going to and from the Canadian Tire facility.
Just a second, Joe. Are the studies and everything available on the website? And then they're listed under a special heading for just this application itself? So that all the studies would be available there, Joe, and you could, if they're not there, you would contact staff to find out exactly.
Well, you know, the computers are wonderful things. Mm-hmm. But computers are also used to keep information from people. I don't think people who are sitting here tonight are going to go home tonight and look up the town of Caledon's website and go through all the information that's there, first of all, to find the information. That information should be available in hard copy for every person who's here, who can then go home, digest it properly, and see what is implied in that.
I guess I can ask the consultant, Paul, would you be willing to provide hard copies to those that ask for the studies that you have?
Yes.
So, well, in response to that, not to people who ask for it, to people, there should be those copies available to everybody who's here, who will walk out of this place with a copy of that information. In that way, people will be able to evaluate clearly what is implied.
Okay, we will take that. But right now, if you are interested in the information, I think the communication will be that we can send that out on the contact sheet. We'll send out a note. Staff will send out an email. If you're interested in specific studies, we'll send the message to Paul, and he can communicate and send that information to him. Is that okay?
Okay, I have two questions. Mr. Mayor, what happened to the information which was dropped off at your office on January the 2nd, summarizing the comments that people had made in regards to their concerns?
My question is staff received a copy of it, and staff have a copy of Mr. Grogan's information?
It was date stamped on January the 2nd. I have a copy of it.
Okay.
I don't have it with me, but they should have a copy of it.
Yeah, and staff, Mary and Peggy both say that they have a copy of it, and I'm sure Alan forwarded your information on. So they do have a copy of it. We all know about it, so we will also be looking for that information when the report comes.
But why isn't that information available to the public? Just not tonight.
Well, because the information tonight, this is a public meeting for the applicant to provide information for the community. This isn't the town providing information to the applicant. The way that this meeting is for them to provide all the information for it.
Obviously, so, I know that. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think everybody.
But your information would not be part of what they're presenting.
Well, listen, if you're going to provide information to all the members of the town of Caledon Council, they're getting one side of the information in regards to the proposal. That's why I took the time on January the 2nd to drop off a copy to the planning department and also to the mayor's office.
Yeah.
And following that, Annette Groves said that she was going to speak to the clerk, is that correct? To see what happened to that material. Would you like to respond?
Joe, and that material is with the planning staff. Mary Nordstrom is the planner on the file, and she's got that, so she will take that into consideration when bringing the report back to council.
But why didn't you get back to me to tell me what had happened?
I'm sorry.
Joel, the direction's this way, please.
Okay.
Staff have your information. We know it's there, and we will be looking for it when the report comes through, because that's when the other half, as you say, the other half of the story comes to us.
Right. The last comment I'd like to make is this. In 2012, when I and many other people made comments to this council regarding the Canadian Tire proposal, okay, this particular situation that we're in right now is reminding me a lot of that. Some people then said, Joe, don't bother, it's a done deal. Some people are saying the same thing to me now. Joe, it's a done deal. I am totally opposed to this particular proposal, and I would like that to be recorded.
Thank you very much, Joe. And it is recorded. Did you sign in, Joe? Just for everybody here, it isn't a done deal. That's not a statement. Tonight is a presentation of the applicant informing the community of what's going on, and council hasn't made a decision on it, nor have staff. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, members of council, mayor, and the committee. My name is Bruce McCall Richmond. I'm a planner with Glenn Schnarr and Associates. We are the planning consultants for Ontario Holdings, owners of approximately 100 acres of land located on the west side of Coleraine Drive at 12724 Coleraine Drive. I'd also like to introduce Jonathan Roger, as we will jointly be providing comments.
Yes, Jonathan Roger from Zelinka Pramo Limited. We are the planning consultants for Bolt Coal Holdings North Inc. and Bolt Coal Holdings South Inc. And Bolt Coal are the owners of approximately 77 hectares of land located on the west side of Coleraine Drive, immediately to the south of the Ontario lands that Bruce was mentioning. Bolt Coal and Ontario were made aware of the applications by MJJJ Developments Inc. for the proposed asphalt plant. And on November 28, 2018, Borden-Ladner-Gervais LLP submitted correspondence on behalf of both Bolt Coal and Ontario to confirm their opposition to the applications for the asphalt plant. And I have a copy of that correspondence I can hand out after our presentation. Based on that letter, we submit that the Bolt Coal lands and the Ontario lands are located directly opposite the proposed asphalt plant on Coleraine Drive. Bolt Coal and Ontario have been heavily involved in all stages of the planning process for their lands and are now in the final approvals for important employment uses for the town. The town recently approved Official Plan Amendment Number 243 and zoning for the Coleraine West Employment Area following a long process to have ROPA 28 approved. The secondary plan designates substantial frontages along Coleraine, Healy, and the future extension of George Bolton as prestige industrial and places considerable emphasis on superior urban design within this designation. The entire secondary plan area is recognized as a gateway to Bolton, requiring streetscape and community design of a consistently high quality. The proposed asphalt production facility raises serious concerns for Ontario and Bolt Coal with respect to the environmental impacts, including odor, noise and dust, as well as views and vistas, and compatibility with prestige employment uses envisioned and planned for the west side of Coleraine Drive. A facility of this type would set a negative precedent for the future direction of the employment lands in the area and for future businesses considering operating in this area. And now we'll turn back to Bruce. Thank you.
So we've received and reviewed the information report dated January 15th, and it's our understanding that upon completion of the consultation and review process, a technical report will be prepared and brought forward to council for consideration. Ontario and Bolt Co. and their consultants are currently reviewing the information report and the applicant's submission materials to address the planning and technical issues raised by the applications. The review is in the context of consistency and conformity with the provincial policy statement, the growth plan, region appeal official plan, and the Town of Caledon official plan, as well as within the context of the Town of Caledon's comprehensive zoning bylaw. Accordingly, on behalf of Ontario and Boltco, we reserve the opportunity to provide comments once the review is complete. Boltco and Ontario have attracted and leased portions of their lands to Class A and Fortune 500 companies with the expectation that a high-quality land use will continue to operate in this area and would be required by the town, that views and vistas will be maintained, and that appropriate environmental conditions for business operations will exist now and in the future. So businesses considering locating in this area and on our clients' lands will surely consider the direct and indirect impacts of an asphalt plant in this area when assessing options for new locations, and an asphalt plant may negatively impact some of those decisions. As such, we'd like to reiterate that Ontario and Boltco are strongly in opposition to the proposed planning applications to permit an asphalt plant. Thank you for your time, and we'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you. If you make sure you sign in on the sheet there, that would be great. If you leave your printed material with the clerk, that would be good too. Next speaker, please come forward. We just take a second. Come through. This way is probably the easiest. Well, no, there's no easy way. Straight out that door over there. Just keep going. Yeah, that's good. Hey.
There you go. So I'm Dominic Maggi. I'm a resident of Bolton. So I've got just three or four short answer questions for whoever for clarification. So who has paid for the studies that that we've all dutifully reviewed?
Paul?
The applicant paid for all the studies that were submitted with the application.
So how do we ensure that those opinions are unbiased?
The town staff will be reviewing all the applications, and they've asked for peer reviews of a number of the applications. I understand those peer reviews have been completed. We haven't been given those peer reviews yet. I understand they're on their way. And that is how town staff review applications and ensure that they're comfortable with the studies that have been submitted.
Okay, thank you. How many jobs are going to be created in an operating mode with this with the plant?
Approximately 15 to 18 jobs will be part of the plant itself. There'll be more jobs in the office building itself.
Okay.
Excuse me.
And how many of those jobs are going to be for Bolton or Caledon residents?
I can't tell you that at this point. I have no idea.
Okay. So I think a previous person had asked where the product would be used, and I understood that it would be not in the Bolton or Caledon area for the most part, 30 to 60 minutes away.
No, that's correct. No, that's not correct, Mr. Chairman. It has to be used within 30 to 60 minutes of coming out of the plant. So it could be in Bolton, could be in Caledon, could be in Brampton, could be in Mississauga, but the longer it takes, the more it's cooling and you can't use
it. Okay. And for the town, how much tax revenue or other revenue do we expect to get on an annual basis?
We probably won't have that done until we get the final report. So
ballpark.
We don't ballpark, so we don't know. And it's usually stated within the final report. So once we get the final report, that information usually is calculated through the finance staff as part of it.
So typically we'd have no idea.
At this stage of the game, we don't, because this is a planning issue and a planning meeting. So when we get into the finances fit into the final report that staff present for us and present to council, and we'll present to anybody that signs in that sheet, Dominic.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please come forward. Yes.
My name is Gail Colton, and I'm a Bolton resident. I would like to present this and have it put on public record. I've got a number of questions.
This way, to your left.
And just briefly, I'm not going to cite everything here, but a couple issues. I've tried to pick apart some of the reports to the best of my ability, and I feel that there's many questions that remain outstanding before anybody can even contemplate whether this is something that should be acceptable or not. Number one, the asphalt plant noise controls require a minimum height of 3 meters, approximately 10 feet high, consisting of acoustic fence, an earth berm, shipping containers, concrete blocks, or other obstruction. Question number one, what is proposed for the continuous 3 meter high barrier, and what will this look like to our residents?
Paul? The 3 meter high barrier, Mr. Chairman, is an acoustic fence, so it's a combination of materials that can mitigate the noise from the facility. So it's a combination of wood and metal. If more information, a noise consultant is here to address it. The site has to go through site plan approval, so the exact design of the acoustical fence has to go through site plan control, so planning department has council has control over what it will actually look like.
Thank you. With respect to the air quality report, the main question is, the conclusion states that a further study is required of potential air quality impacts for health and nuisance, and recommends that DECON use its best practice management practice plan for control. My question, how do we ensure that the best management practice plan is continuously carried out, and what happens if it isn't or is not constant?
The best management practices plan has a series of checklists that have to be completed on a daily, weekly basis, and those records need to be kept on site for a period of at least 2 years. So at any time, the ministry can visit the site and check that the records are being kept.
And that would be the MOE, Ministry of Environment?
That would, yes.
And how do the residents follow up with that information?
So the residents can follow up with the ministry. I'm sure the plant would also be open to discussing with residents if they're interested in making sure that they're managing their plans.
So does the MOE make those records public, or they end up being a record between the MOE and the plant?
Typically, the ministry doesn't make them public, but I mean, we can certainly. So the records have to be available at the plant, so there could be some discussion as to whether a resident can go and check that those records are being kept. It's not common practice, though.
Okay, next one, traffic impact study. We've talked about that, so I'm going to kind of skip over that. But I think what I would like to bring up is the fact that the information that was provided to the applicant by the town of Caledon was back in November 2016, and I question whether that's still valid given the changes to the coloring bypass, and still question whether or not we can handle the traffic. That's been addressed. As far as the environmental noise impact is proposed, it recommends that there be further that qualified acoustical engineer report to be undertaken, and I haven't seen that that's been conducted. Correct?
Maybe I can ask, can I ask Nicholas to comment on that?
Yeah, there's a seat right there. Just use it.
Good afternoon. My name is Nicholas Sylvester Williams. I'm the acoustical engineer that prepared it. This is for a rezoning application, so the noise study prepared is to satisfy that. There is typically, after that point, there is further details as more things are ratified. Example, you asked about the barriers earlier, so it's preliminary. This is what we think it's going to be made of. There's further studies, if they were to be approved, that would say, okay, this definitely satisfies, this definitely doesn't. It's typically under a site plan approval building permit stage.
So at this stage, we could have a 10-foot wall made out of concrete containers based on this evidence, based on your report.
At this stage, what we've said is we know we need barriers. The detailed design, if we get approved, will be designed later. But that goes to council and to the public, I guess, for another opportunity to check. So it's not as if at this point, it's going to say, yes, you're going to get that, and there's no other checks and balances. There's multiple checks and balances.
Thank you for now. Okay, arborist report. It talks about, I think there's only 9 trees will remain from the 45 that are in existence. And it also, the arborist report recommends that the neighboring properties ensure that no construction materials should be placed in the drip line. Questions, how does the town of Caledon monitor this? Who pays for the monitoring, and what will be done to deal with this immediately? Question number 2, is it correct that this complies with the town Caledon Woodlands bylaw? And also, how do we enforce the, I'll leave that question, I'll leave that for now.
Paul?
So, Mr. Chairman, the trees, there's not a woodland of trees. These are, there's a rural residential, former rural residential property, so there are rural residential trees on the site. So the study actually, our risk report says the woodlands bylaw doesn't apply because it's not a woodland. In terms of the trees that are maintained, the site plan approval will identify what trees are maintained and how they have to be maintained, particularly during construction with where the damage can occur to trees that are supposed to be protected. So all that will be addressed through conditions of site plan control.
Okay.
Okay, and just the recommendation, by the way, it says it's recommended that trees on the neighboring properties not be removed. No construction materials should be placed in drip lines of those trees. How do you force a neighbor to adhere to that?
Mr. Chairman, that's not with regard to the neighbor. That's regarded when my client does the construction on this property, that the drip line of the trees on a neighboring property is respected. Again, that will be addressed through conditions of site plan control.
And the last one is with respect to the urban design. That's already been brought up. My question again was just to please confirm the details as how this conforms. Your reports in the conclusion, particularly, how this conforms with the Town of Caledon policy, as mentioned above, and particularly given the high, the 3 meter high barrier surrounding the plant.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Did you leave a copy of those with the clerk? Yes. Okay. Yes, please. Yeah, and then, yes, if you could sign in. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Chair DeBoer, Council, members of public and press, and our local businesses. I just want to touch base on something.
Just state your name, Sherry.
Oh, sorry. I should know that. Sherry Broshi, resident of Caledon. Mrs. Colton brought up a very good point about, and the applicant brought up about site, that things are going to be done through site plan control. Just a piece of information for the members of public. The site plan process, the public is not allowed to be part of, so I just want to make that clear to the members of public. Moving forward, I realize that fiscal impact has been touched on, but, you know, we went through budget today. We started off at a 5.79% local tax increase. We're now up to 6.11% local tax increase. I as a resident, I hear out of the Town of Caledon Council, is the goal is to subsidize commercial industrial to rise that fiscal side to offset the burden for the residential component. And I think the goal was the 70-30 split. And I get that. But I've also seen that for the last 10 years, and we're nowhere near that. So, yes, I would like to see the fiscal impact study for this application be made public knowledge so we can see, A, the cost and the revenue, so we know what the net revenue will be to put towards our capital budgets from now and the future. So I would ask the applicant to please submit that to the Town of Caledon and allow the members of public to see that. Secondly, Caledon residents and town staff and council, along with hired consultants, go through a very lengthy, expensive process creating official plans and zoning bylaws. Here we are, this zoning is a prestige industrial, that whole area is prestige industrial. I understand what the applicant is doing. I also understand that by law, you can make an amendment to these plans. But under the local planning tribunal now, it is up to the municipality in the province of Ontario that has further strength to protect our official plans. I would hope that this council protects the official plan. There is other areas in the Town of Caledon to have these types of things. I'm not going to go back, but I'm going to move forward. I think it's time that the Town of Caledon partnership up with the Region Appeal, considering now they are responsible for the municipal comprehensive reviews, to find employment lands for this type of stuff in another area. And I'm going to again suggest Tullamore. There is no residential component in our official plan from Mayfield all the way up Airport Road into Sand Hill. If you're going to do this kind of stuff, along with logistics, and I get the logistics, against residential components, I'm sorry, it's not supported in our community. Now, I would like to say thank you to the businesses that have come forward. I'm not going to start naming names to support our community and said no. I am going to say this. Protect our official plan, protect our zoning, and I do not support this application. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. Did you sign in?
No.
Over there.
But I could do that. Thank you.
Okay. It's on. It should be on. There you go.
Sorry?
It should be on. There you go.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Hi, my name is Linda Archibald. I'm a resident of Caledon. Feels like forever, seeing all the changes that have happened. Anyway,
Pull that mic a little bit closer because it is recording.
Oh. Sorry, I'm
too short. And speak into the mic, too. That would be good. There. Perfect.
Anyway, I recently retired, so look out. I finally found out some time that I had to come forward with some of the issues. As some of the people have mentioned before, this area, the area the official zoning on this is agriculture. It's sitting in the middle of a prestige industry area, and it can be changed. However, we spent a lot of money to do an update. The update says by Meridian, it's dated June 2006, it says, as noticed previously in this report, the prestige industrial designation is intended to apply to employment lands to provide for, and I quote, clean industry as well as office uses. Okay, I guess you could argue that's clean. Anyway, further on in it, the summary of the recommendations, and I'm not, council's already seen this, it says, on lands designated prestige industrial or general industrial in the official plan, but currently zoned as agricultural, A1, it is recommended that the town apply appropriate corresponding prestige industrial or service industrial zoning. So we spent a lot of money to do this, and everybody knows that probably that should happen, and that's where, like everything around it, if you look on the old zoning bylaw, is prestige industrial. It makes no sense to put it there. So that's one of the questions. Then I had time to go through the report that justifies why it should happen. So I had some questions there, too. First of all, we have been making a big deal in this town about the fact that we don't have a proper ratio, and the province says that we're supposed to have X number of employment on X number of hectares. And this one in SGL's report tells us that we're still not meeting the standard and we're not meeting by a lot. So now we're giving up, we're hiring 11 to 18 people, and we're supposed to be putting 42 people there. So again, we have a chance to make a difference and put numbers on the board, and we're taking a step back and saying, oh, it's okay, next time we'll do it. Somewhere along the line, we've got to say, hey, it's about time we looked at it and we do it. The other thing was some of the justifications I thought were funny, and I mentioned this to Paul. The provincial policy statement, okay, one of his logics for it was, no other asphalt plant was noted in this area, and so in itself, permitting the use of this will contribute to the high range of employment uses. Well, it seems to me this is kind of a really funny way to get an extra or a different kind of employment use. I mean, we could look better for the use of our lands. He's also quoted a couple of times a couple of things. The hydrogeological report says that there's a high quality aquifer underneath a portion of the property. I understand that is something that can be dealt with. I didn't see the report online, so it needs to be put online so you can see it. Some of the justifications here is a density, okay? The site is vacant. Okay, we all know that. I mean, does that justify why we should put that there? One other thing that I wanted to mention was there's a thing in here that says that in the Hydro G report again, that any long-term impacts can be mitigated through a spill management plan. I'm just wondering, have we got one in place before we do this? Because that's something that needs to be happening. And the last thing that I will mention with this PPS was it also says that in his report that a specific policy 2.5.24 states that mineral aggregate operations will be protected from development and activities that could preclude or hinder their expansion or continued use. Well, I understand that it could hinder the expansion, but this is not expansion. This is putting something that doesn't exist there, and then we're subject to having it the possibility it can be expanded. And then we would have trouble because we would be hindering it being expanded. And so with that, I will close. I thank you for your time. I also thank the people of the town that have had the courage to stand up and say what they believe, and the industry that we do have here that we need to protect and we need to support. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Don't forget to sign in. Please, next speaker, come forward.
Good evening. My name is Sonia Brzia. I'm a resident of Caledon. I believe somebody earlier had questioned what the benefits to residents would be in having this plant in our area, and I don't believe there was an answer. I know we touched on some job creation. Is there any other benefits? So that's one of my questions to having the plant here.
Please, Paul, if you want to take a swing at that one.
Yeah, certainly, absolutely. So the primary purchaser of asphalt is government. And the closer you can have an asphalt plant to where the government needs the asphalt, the more economical it is. So that is the benefit to the public of asphalt plants.
Okay, and my other question is, and just with regards to traffic and to sort of understand, get an idea, I know it was mentioned that it's about 61 trucks peak hour, at the peak hours that would be coming through. What is that in comparison to other plants in the area, or like warehouses such as the Canadian Tire plant in comparison? Would somebody be able to answer that? Or?
Yeah, the Canadian Tire plant at the peak hour is between 250 and 285 vehicle trips at the peak hour. This site is, as I said, 62. It's 31 coming in, which is different from this one, is they're coming in and basically leaving right away as they pick up their product. So it's 62 versus.
So is that 62 like going in and coming out?
31 going in and 31 coming out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Do sign in, please. Next speaker, please come forward.
John Payton, resident of Bolton.
Just speak, pull the mic up a little bit and speak closer into it. That's good.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. John Payton, resident of Bolton. A couple of quick questions here. I noticed out on the display there, your odor control system consists of spraying basically a deodorant over the truck as it's leaving. What does that do for the environment? How are you protecting the environment using that? You've got Effin Foods spending millions in a scrubber system, and then you're letting somebody pump out a deodorizer out of a bottle, out of a barrel, basically?
Paul? Or?
So there's an opportunity to add what's called an odor neutralizer. So it's not sprayed over the truck or anything like that. It's actually added to the AC as it's being delivered to the site. So it actually is contained with the AC, the asphalt cement, which is the liquid product. So its purpose is to neutralize odors as it's working through the system.
Okay,
so it's not sprayed on the truck at the end of it.
Well, that's what it shows out on your display out there. It shows as a truck, as it's open bed, it goes over a liquid sprayer, which sprays the unit.
No, I don't think that's right. I'll have a look at it.
It shows over on that.
Okay, because once we're concluded,
what are you doing to trap the odors that are dangerous to the atmosphere? What are you doing? It's just open, you're just loading into the truck and it's going into the air?
Mm-hmm.
No?
So Paul was actually just indicated that what the diagram shows, it's the tire wash.
Okay.
Right.
So for those trucks that are depositing the aggregates, to keep the dust down on the site, that's where you have the tire wash. So
okay.
No dust gets out on the public roads.
So I didn't see any catchment area on your plan there for the water runoff from your truck wash or whatever. What are you doing with that?
That's just a small area that the tires go through to keep the dust down. That's all addressed on site. It's just a small area where it's washed and recirculated.
Yeah, but any water runoff, do you
there's no water runoff. Maybe I can just ask if we need more information on this, Mark Howard from GenCor.
Mark, where'd he go?
He was here. We can provide more detail to planning staff that they can make available on that. It's best that the manufacturer talks exactly how that works, but it's basically just to keep the dust down on the site and on the street.
Okay.
So they will get the information, and through the website it will be posted there.
Okay. I heard we're also putting traffic lights up at the intersection to accommodate this. Who's picking up the cost for the additional traffic lights? And if you're putting 61 fully loaded trucks in and out an hour, what is the impact on the wear and tear of that road based on the traffic from the Canadian Tire, plus you're going to have the traffic from the Amazon warehouse? What's the impact based on the road repairs on that one compared to how much money we're getting in revenue? Has anybody done a study on that to find out how much it's costing us?
Well, that will be part of the report probably when we get it back, but it's a question that staff will have to address now that you brought it up. As far as traffic volumes, and I know the region, because it's a regional road now, they will be commenting on that too. We'll see that it's part of the report.
To be honest with you, I live in Ward 5. It seems that Ward 5 is just a dumping ground for everything from the council over here. Anything, we did the same with Canadian Tire, you had months of public debate. It was all a done deal. This really, to be honest with you, I don't know why we're burying it. It's prestige industrial land. It shouldn't be getting changed.
The applicants have made an application. We are required by law to deal with the application as they present it to the town.
Now, I hope the town actually considers the will of the residents
yep.
rather than the money that they're making on this. And to be honest with you, you've had people up here that have bought land and are willing to walk away from this. I honestly don't think it's very good business sense.
Well, and we will take that comment plus all the other comments tonight, and it will be part of the record that staff will be putting together to compile a decision. But it's an application that's been put before the town, and we have to deal with it tonight, and we're dealing with it tonight, and the staff will be doing a complete report. And if your name is on that list, you'll find a copy of it, probably emailed, I guess is the intent, is how it will go out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening. My name is Angela Panacci. Thank you for having us. And just have a couple of questions for the applicant. Specific to the air quality study document, on page 2, it says that the liquid asphalt will be delivered by tanker truck to the plant. So just wanted to understand what are some of the environmental risks and issues should there be, if any, should there be any like accidents or spill? What does that mean for the residents and to the community?
Sure. So the liquid asphalt, when it's delivered, is hot. So it's about 320 degrees Fahrenheit when it's hot. And it needs to be delivered at that temperature because at ambient temperature, it's a solid. So in the event that there was a spill, asphalt cement cools very quickly and it actually becomes a solid. So it's not, so if there's a spill of asphalt cement, it's not like a spill of diesel oil in that it infiltrates and it disappears off site, so it's quite different that way. Also, there will be spill containment around the asphalt cement storage tank. So where the asphalt cement storage is stored, even though if there were to be a spill, it would solidify very quickly, there's still a concrete storage containment area. And I had noticed that one of the other speakers had discussed a spills management plan. That's certainly something that would be very quick and easy to put together for the site, just to clarify.
Thank you.
Those.
So on page 3, It says that the plant is expected to operate between 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., so that's 12 hours. However, it is also mentioned that on occasions it can operate for 24 hours. If I understand correctly, I think the gentleman mentioned that it would be going 24 hours if there is an urgent request from MTO. So just wanting to understand, what is the likelihood of that happening? I know that you cannot predict the future, but based on experience, out of 365 days of the year, how many times have plants gone 24 hours?
I would have to ask Mark, or the manufacturer of the plant, how many times it would happen. And just to clarify, it depends on who the municipality is that needs it. It might not be MTO. It could be the region, could be the city of Brampton, could be the town of Calgary, whoever the client is that needs it. But it's only those municipalities that need it in an emergency to have that pavement in the middle of the night.
So there's a risk.
Unfortunately, Mark doesn't seem to be with us right now, so he would be the best person to identify that, but we can certainly give that information to the planning department.
So there's a risk that this won't be kind of like a one-off, but it will be a lot more common, although not able to predict the future, but given the growth that's happening within our communities and just the different variables, it doesn't seem to me like this is going to be like once in a blue moon.
That's not my understanding, but we will get some more definitive information on other plants and how often that occurs.
Perfect. So with this plant being able to run within 12 hours to 24 hours, what is the capacity of asphalt to be produced on a daily basis at maximum?
I think we're looking for Mark again, are we?
400 tons an hour.
Okay, so that's 4,800 tons a day on a 12-hour day at full capacity. All right. So then my next comment is based on page number 5 of the air quality. I read that there is a small number of sensitive receptors being residents, daycares, restaurants, people. And they're still within some areas of the potential influence of impact and the aggregate storage area. So I was reading the report, and it said that there's potential air contaminants. Now, I'm not going to speak to quantities because I would be lying to you if I told you that I understand what the quantities meant. But I just kind of read the contaminants, and I did a little bit of research, and perhaps there needs to be a little bit more education on my side, but I just want to tell you what I found out. So based on the U.S. National Library of Medicine, nitrogen oxides is a group of 7 gases composed of nitrogen and oxygen. These are emitted through different ways, whether vehicle exhaust and burning coal, oil, diesel fuel, natural gas, etc. Nitrogen oxides reacts with sunlight and other chemicals to form smog. And then some of the things that they also wrote is what happens in the short term when there is an exposure to that. There's irritation to the respiratory system, eyes and skin, and long-term asthma and respiratory infections. And then I also, going down the list of the potential kind of pollutants that might be within the area, there was also polyaromatic hydrocarbons, also known as PAH. Again, I don't know, based on the quantity, like it may be a minute amount. I don't claim that there's going to be huge exposures to it, but I'm concerned because it says that according to Wikipedia, not saying that it's the most reliable way, but it says that cancer is the primary human risk of exposure. In addition to also further down being noted that arsenic, is noted on page 9. So I understand that there has been done due diligence on this, but I just wanted to express some of the concerns that I have heard also from residents, peers, and just children, parents of children in the area. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Please sign in. Next speaker, please come forward. Please state your name.
Thank you, Chair DeBoer. My name is Rob Mezzapelli. I'm a resident of Bolton. Good evening, Chair DeBoer, Mayor Thompson, members of council. I am heartened to hear the resounding expressions of concern and opposition that I've heard not only for our residences, which I was hoping to expect to see, but also our businesses, which I think is very telling. That pulls the complete community picture together of residents and businesses, and they both shared similar concern and opposition. I'm here today in representation of my family, but I also come as a former area councillor from Bolton for having 8 years of experience and knowledge that I've gained in that time. I want to start by saying I am entirely opposed to this application. I want to make that perfectly clear. It is important to note that it is not supported by either the official plan or the zoning bylaw, which is why there's an amendment required for both. There's language in our official plan that actually states that nuisance uses are to be discouraged, particularly and mostly in prestige industrial, which these lands are. The zoning bylaw does not even permit, not only does it not permit this use, that use is not even mentioned in the zoning bylaw. I think that's extremely telling, and something I think that should weigh heavily on your minds as you, and if and when this comes to council for a vote. Personally, my opinion is I don't believe this should be anywhere in Caledon, but least of all in an urban area such as Bolton, for having such a use. As was mentioned earlier, these lands are prestige industrial. They are to be prestige industrial. And that is intended for the highest order of industrial use that we can hope to get. This application, no offense to the applicant, but it represents some of the lowest orders of employment industrial land use. And with that, it offers some of the highest degrees of community conflict, which is something that you're going to have to consider very strongly as you determine whether this is appropriate for the Bolton area. The conflicts that it does cause involve such items as high truck volumes, congestion issues related to that, road safety issues, air quality issues, odor issues, visibility issues, and noise issues. So it's clear to see that there are a number of real community conflicts here that go hand in hand with such industry. As a Bolton councillor, I spoke and received countless emails from residents, and none expressed support for this application. I just wanted to share that. There were, as one online poll was submitted to tonight, I know there was two, at least that I recall, and my recollection is that there was 1,000 signatures to each of those expressing opposition to this application. This gained a lot of attention on social media, literally hundreds of posts, comments, and I did not find any that supported this application. Public meeting held by the applicant, I understand Mr. Grogan spoke to that. There was not support for this application. Even at the Ward 5 election debate, well attended, it was asked, were there members of the public that supported this? And I did not see a hand raised. Here tonight, clearly, there is public concern and opposition to this. My point in saying all of this is it is clear that the public is not supportive of this application. And I think that is paramount in your decision making. I guess through the lens of my experience as a counselor, have looked at this in other ways. Because it's not uncommon to have an amendment to an application. Many applications that come across Caledon and get built come with amendments. So the question is there value in making those amendments? And one of the first ones that pops up to me on top of all the conflicts that I mentioned is the employment density. It's actually extremely low. And the jobs themselves, I suspect, would not be the highest order nor the highest compensated jobs. One thing that wasn't touched on heavily was they talked under the environmental effects, the Ministry of the Environment and Climate Change, the areas of impact, and I believe for a class three, it's 300 meters. But there's also an area of influence, I believe it's called, which for a site like this is a kilometer. One thing that wasn't identified, because I have looked at all of the reports in the applicant's submission, is any reference to the current, albeit entirely opposed to, Brez location, which is on the west side of Coleraine, just west of the now designated employment lands. That 1 kilometer radius, if it doesn't cross into those Brez lands, it gets darn close. And it's never been identified in any of the studies or reports that I've seen. And I think it's important to note that, that I hope that that isn't Bolton's Brez lands, but if it is, that could be under the area of influence of this plant. I talked about the low order of industrial use that this brings, again, on Bolton Prestige lands. And I'm glad to hear some of the businesses, the existing businesses in the area, spoke of their concern. Some are concerned about their tenants not renewing leases. I think that's significant. And it's also important to look at lands that are not developed. If you look at the satellite photo, there are a number of lands that are yet to be developed. One that strikingly jumps out at me is the land immediately north of this. It's a very thin strip, similar to this parcel, and yet it is designated prestige industrial, such as this one. If this were to go forward and be a an asphalt plant, what is the likelihood of those lands being prestige industrial? What is the pressure for those lands to fall in line and also be a lower order of employment lands? I think that would be actually quite high. I'm actually surprised that there's not something that requires those two parcels to merge into a larger one so that there could be a more substantial building parcel to put prestige industrial development on. So that's something as well to think about is the undeveloped lands. What influence will this have on them? I talked about that. I want to end by just asking four questions. And one of them I have asked as a counselor in the last term, and I did not get an answer. So I would like to publicly ask it tonight. In the traffic impact study, it talks about the peak hour and there being 124 truck movements in that peak hour. My question is, what is the average? I'm not looking for peak, but in this industry, what on average would the number of truck movements be on a typical 12-hour day?
The peak hour, as I said, is 62 trucks, and that's the worst case with all the supply trucks coming at that same 1 hour, so substantially less than that. And it all depends on what the volume will be in terms of the clients needing it. Do they need it in the morning? Do they need it in the afternoon? So it's tough to say. 62, the absolute peak, could be close to that, could be a heck of a lot less if there's not the need for it in that morning. Could be zero. It all depends on what the need is, when, what time of the day. Peak hour in the morning is 62. Then the rest of the hours are less.
Okay, and I expected that would be the response. I just have trouble accepting it, quite frankly. If you know that you're putting 300,000 tons out per year, and you know you can get 20 tons on a truck, and you know you have a facility that can produce 400 tons an hour, I find it hard to believe, and there's 130 in the province of Ontario, that there can't be an answer on how many trucks there are on an average day. Because that is an important piece that will help paint the picture for you in what the community impacts will be. I don't expect that it would be peak hour every hour for 12 hours. I will give the applicant that. But even at half capacity over 12 hours, you're talking about an astounding number of trucks per day. And I'm talking about numbers that parallel the Canadian Tire site, which is 25 times the size. So that is what we're looking at. And so to just have a peak hour provides a smaller number, which in my mind doesn't paint a clear picture on the impact this will have on a daily basis. I did the math on for the Canadian Tire, 175 trucks in and out, and divided that by 22 hours. That's like 16 or 17 trucks in an hour. So when we're talking 62, that's a significant amount. And again, I know it's peak, but it's an important parallel to make. So I would like that number to be known. I don't think it's impossible to provide. I think that and at least an average or an estimate could be provided. So I would like to ask that through you, Chair DeBoer.
Okay.
Can we go, I don't know if you have the clicker, to go to the slide that talks about the truck movements and, no, it's the one that talks about the 40 trucks or the 62 on peak hour.
This is the slide. 31 trucks would enter and exit in the peak hour. 31 plus 31 is 62.
Okay, so the 40 trucks are for the, they would come in empty and pick up the asphalt. Then the other 20, I believe, are supply trucks with your aggregate, and then there's one asphalt cement truck.
No, this is the peak hour.
Right.
31 is everything together at the peak hour. This supply, this is pick up the asphalt to take away for the projects. This is the aggregate trucks. This is everything.
Sorry, this is... Okay. So my question is... Not the trucks that are coming empty and loading up with the asphalt, the supply trucks that I'm assuming bring in your sand, your aggregate. Can you just quickly explain, is it 10 in and 10 out per day? Was that what I read in the, I don't have my sheet with me.
I don't have the transportation consultant here, and I don't have the transportation report directly in front of me. I can certainly provide that information to the planning staff and the breakdown.
So you'll provide the breakdown?
I'll provide the breakdown to planning staff.
So what would be on those trucks, though? Would it be the virgin material, the sand, the aggregate?
It would be the aggregate, which is the virgin material, the recycled aggregate, and also the asphalt concrete, the liquid form that Bridget was talking about that's heated.
Okay. I'm going to have to go through my notes again. I thought it was 10 trucks in and out per day. And if that were the case, on the reclaimed asphalt side, I can't believe that 10 in and 10 out would be reclaimed asphalt and virgin material. I sat on an asphalt plant for an hour, and I saw, I think, three reclaimed asphalt trucks come in that hour, and it was off peak. So I would be looking for clarification on that as well. Someone asked me to ask a question who had already spoken. The two piles of reclaimed asphalt, what is the height of those piles?
So, Mr. Chairman, my understanding from town staff is the maximum permitted under the bylaw is 6 meters.
Okay, so it would comply with the existing bylaw?
That's correct.
Okay. The last question through you, Chair DeBoer, is the office building. Is it specifically and only related to the use as it pertains to the asphalt facility?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding. Digicon, the owner of the property, also the construction arm, also owns the office building that's just been completed on the east side of Simpson. So that's their main office building. This would be their second office building.
Okay, so this would be an office building for the asphalt plant.
That's my understanding.
Okay, because some of the diagrams I've seen almost show like a separation between the two, and it made me wonder whether that was for another use entirely. So I understand now that it's for the asphalt plant. That concludes my questions and comments, and I will sign.
If you leave your information with the clerk, and it's there if you want.
I will submit it to the clerk, because I made a whole bunch of notes here. I will submit it to the clerk.
Okay, and sign in, Rob.
Okay.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Connors, and I'm speaking tonight as a subject matter expert on behalf of the Canadian Network for Respiratory Care. I've been the executive director for 15 years. CNRC is a nonprofit organization. We have 2,500 certified respiratory educators across Canada, the United States, and internationally. I've been in this job for 15 years, so have quite a bit of expertise, and CNRC is known to be a leader in creating awareness and education on the linkages between air quality and health. The first comment that I wanted to make is, I read the air quality studies in quite a bit of detail, that they're based on modeling projections, not on real-time air quality monitoring. Two councils ago, the late Richard Whitehead put forward a motion that was passed by council that we were supposed to look into putting forward an air quality bylaw in the town of Caledon, and nothing ever happened with that. So I would like to first say again that, you know, we're speaking fiction when we put out reports that say there's not going to be any harm from air quality, because without real-time air quality monitoring, you have no idea what the emissions are going to be. The town of Oakville, and I've said this, you know, has a very, very good air quality bylaw related to health that if the town of Caledon were to implement these applications, you wouldn't have to sit up here listening to one consultant say, oh, there's not going to be a problem. Our computer modeling based on wind projections at the airport, there's not going to be any impact. If you had air quality monitoring in place, you would know if you had problems with emissions. The equipment is quite inexpensive now. You can have it in place. They're able to do it in Oakville, and we could do that here, and it would make it all a lot easier. And they implemented in 2012 with their major emission reduction strategy, a strategy to deal with existing businesses. But in every new application, they're required to, and put forward a significant amount of money to track the airborne fine particulate matter, to collect information on sources of emission, and to reduce the town's ambient air. So I'm going to suggest that again on this, because on the specific application, when I looked at the 300 meters, I just did it from Google Maps because I didn't see any information, but I counted 5 residences. Now, I don't know whether they are occupied or not within the 300 meters, the sensitive receptors. So I don't know if the applicant was doing it based on where the plant was on the site plan, but my understanding of how the legislation works is it should be the 300 meters from the property line, not from where the plant is location, because site plans can be amended, and as has been pointed out by a previous speaker, we don't have any detail that could change from those projections. So that 5 residences mean that we're violating that Class 3 industrial requirement. On the adverse health effects, I'd like to just speak briefly. So we talk about multiple exposures, multiple effects. So there are lots of emissions that will be produced by an asphalt plant, one of the most emission-producing industries that you could have. And some will be from the production, but also the transportation. Those 31 trucks a day are diesel-emitting vehicles, which is responsible for most of the 2.5 particulates that we have a problem with. And why we care about the 2.5 particulates are those are the really small ones that you can't see that get lodged deeply into your lungs, that the body has no natural way to produce it. I have here, and I could produce, you know, probably thousands of science papers showing the linkages between particulates and human health, but I just grabbed one because I had it on my desk. It's a newer one from the Canadian Medical Association and the Canadian Public Health Association, published in the prestigious Lancet Medical Journal. But it, just based on annual premature deaths from the PM2.5, they estimated 9,500 deaths in Canada are from attributable to the 2.5s, and that is mostly from the largest number are from industry, and this would fall into that, and from land-based transportation, the diesel-emitting trucks. So going back to the multiple exposures, multiple effects. So the likelihood of an adverse response to an inhaled pollutant depends on the degree of exposure, the dose, where people spend your time. Children are more at risk, and one of the reasons why children are more at risk is that they tend to spend more time outdoors, and they inhale more per unit body weight compared to adults, and exposure begins in their lungs before their immune system is fully developed. So that's why we do see higher instances of asthma, and I've said this multiple times to council, but the Central West Lynn, where we're located, has the highest asthma rates in the entire province. So we know that we already have a problem with the amount of industry in Brampton, Mississauga, Caledon. The other issues that impact it are the level of activity. People who are more active and outside more would have a higher breathing rate, and then weather variables. But again, using computer projections, and again, you know, and there's been a lot that's come out recently that even in the universities, in the University of Alberta was just exposed for the academic experts who are supposed to be doing a lot of these studies are paid for by industry, so that the science has been disputed. We don't have, you know, a lot of impartial consultants to do this work because their, you know, resident groups, community groups, can't afford to hire them. They virtually all work for industry, so they aren't impartial, and they have a job to say that there's not going to be a problem. And this could all be solved with real-time air quality monitoring. So that's a little bit. And again, I mean, previous speakers have spoken to it, but you know, this is serious stuff. It is, you know, respiratory disease, asthma, COPD, cardiovascular disease, premature deaths, premature births, and infant deaths, all related to particulate matter. So this is serious. It's not something that should be dismissed, and I don't think it's the right location. I've said this over and over again, but industrial development like this does not belong in close proximity to the places where we live, work, play, and go to school. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Be sure to sign in, please, Cheryl.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mayor, committee members, my name is John Bosco. I'm here representing Darden. And we own the properties along Par Boulevard from Simpson to Coleraine. So the juxtaposition is very close. You've heard concerns, as are our concerns, for the desirability of our property, our current tenants, and our future tenants. And we are also concerned about property values. I don't think anyone has actually asked the question, what will happen to property values in that proximity? and I'd like the committee to address that. I would argue that property values will decrease, and with that argument, I would take that to our consultants, and we would look at reviewing our impact and our property taxes to reflect that decrease in property values.
We can ask, it's a very difficult exercise, but we can ask the staff to consider if there's a way to do it. Paul, if you have a way to do it, I don't expect an answer tonight, but I think if you may need to work with staff, because that has come up a couple of times.
We'll work with staff.
Okay.
Okay, I think the only other statement I want to make is that I think we have approximately 300 square feet under roof, and we are currently developing more. We've invested in Bolton area in good faith. We knew when we were buying in the Prestige Industrial area that that's what we wanted. We expected to be producing buildings of that caliber, and that's what we're doing. And I'm just saying that in good faith, I think that we should not change the designation of the Prestige Industrial for that area.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Be sure to sign in. Next speaker, please.
Hi, everybody. My name is Anthony Zambito, and I got a couple questions for the applicant. So earlier tonight, the applicant has said that the proposed location for the Ashbel plant must be more than 300 meters away from a residential area. Are there any regulations against putting an Ashbel plant near schools? Because I know there's a Montessori school located about a kilometer away from the Simpson Avenue entrance.
Yeah, that's correct. Same with schools, which is beyond the 300 meters. And it's for the residential designated properties, not the not residential properties that are designated industrial.
Thank you. My second question. I know that there are petitions opposing the Ashbel plant. One was presented earlier. Can the applicant provide us with any petitions, polls, or surveys in favor of an Ashbel plant at the proposed location?
We provide technical applications, technical reports, as asked for by town staff.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do sign in. Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name is Darlene Kaiser, and I'm a resident of the North Hill. So I'm not affected, I guess, in the area where this is planned, but as a resident of Caledon, I feel that I should make my feelings known that I'm totally opposed to this plant being built. Sorry, I'm really nervous. I'm not really good at public speaking. For all the reasons that have been expressed here tonight, but one of the ones that came to my mind is when they say operations will be from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. unless it's an emergency, I find that more and more municipalities are paving the roads at night to have less impact on people's traffic travel time. So I don't think they would be running the plant just at emergency times, because it seems that more and more roads are being paved in the evening. So I don't think that's a fair statement that they made, and I think that's something that council really needs to make sure is not happening at other asphalt plants.
Thank you, Darlene.
Thank you.
Make sure you sign in, please. Next speaker, please.
My name is Carma Ginden, and I live in Caledon. I'm also a business owner here. And I just have two studies that I wanted to reference, and I think while this may not be the U.S. studies, one was commissioned through the Center for Health and Environmental Justice, and another one I found in the American Economic Review. And I just this addresses some of the issues that were raised by some of the other speakers. I wanted to say that according to these studies, the two studies I just mentioned both did property value studies of homes and properties close to asphalt plants, and they found that property values decreased between 11% up to 56% that were beside that were near asphalt plants. And while this is an American study, I don't think it's unfair to assume that that might also apply here. And I think I heard, if I heard correctly, there was mentioned that 300 tons will be produced per year. 300,000 tons will be produced per year?
I believe that's right. Answer, Paul.
Okay.
Is that
correct, 400 tons a day.
Okay, according to, again,
That's the maximum potential
year, right?
From the plant.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
The Center for Health and Environmental Justice, again, looked at this, and they report that a small asphalt plant producing 100,000 tons of asphalt a year may release up to 50 tons of toxic fugitive emissions into the air. And toxic fugitive emissions, if I understand, doesn't just refer to dust, but also to gases. And again, somebody had mentioned that many of these studies are computer-based, based on ideal circumstances, kind of these abstract ideas, and don't very well account for human error, leaks, spills, and those kinds of things. So I just wanted to bring up some of the research around this.
Can you leave that information so the staff have it, please?
Absolutely. Leave it where?
Right with the clerk there. That's okay, and then if you sign in.
Yep. Thank you.
Are there any other speakers from the public that wish to come up? Anybody seated that wants to come? Okay. Members of council, is there any members of council who have any questions? We're not here to debate the matter, just matter this evening, because we're not making a decision, but it's questions of the applicant only and clarification for information. Councillor Sinclair.
Yes, thank you. Through you to the applicant, Mr. Chairman. I noticed in your presentation you said there is no truck delivery at night, but that leaves open in my mind truck shipping at night for highway work. What do you see as a possibility for that occurring on a normal basis?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I believe that was asked by one of the residents, and I indicated we would get back on a better understanding from other plants of what has occurred. Our understanding, it's an emergency when the government clients need it in the evening, but we will get from other plants what their experience has been.
Okay. How will the town learn about what you learn?
We will provide all the information that I said would provide through the planning department.
Okay, will that somehow become publicly available?
Yes, it will be added to the website, the dedicated location on the town website.
Okay, there were another question is there were concerns about access to the hard copies of all the technical reports. Through you, Mr. Chairman, to the applicant, are hard copies available at the Bolton Library?
Is that a possibility?
Sure, we can have copies available at the library.
Okay.
And if somebody wants copies, just let me know.
Yeah. So I think that's two options, and I think that option was available earlier, Ian, that they would supply copies to anyone who requests it. To be prudent on paper, I think that's the best way to do it. Continue.
Okay.
I can't take questions from the floor. To have the information so you can contact somebody to have it sent to you?
Well, we don't know who he is.
Yeah. So yes. We can contact the information through Mary Nordstrom at the town of Caledon and her email address, and we can, through the website, correct? Would that be the easiest way to do it? Yes, we will have his contact information posted as part of the website, and you can contact him directly to request any information that you want from him. Continue, Ian.
Yes, thank you. Through you, Mr. Chairman, to the applicant. I didn't hear much in terms of planning justification report of your presentation. There was lots of details about the site and shipping and so on. And the provincial policy statement 2014 under the healthy, livable, and safe communities are sustained by PPS 1.1.1C, avoiding development which may cause environmental or public health and safety concerns. Is that been dealt with in your planning justification?
Yes, it has, through the compendium reports of both the noise and air quality, and Bridget is here and can respond. And her report has identified there's no health impacts from this plant.
Okay. And then further, there's, Mr. Chairman, another part of the provincial policy statements deals with land use compatibility. And so policy 1.2.6.1 reads, major facilities and sensitive land uses should be planned to ensure they are appropriately designed, buffered, and or separated from each other to prevent or mitigate adverse effects from odor, noise, and other contaminants, minimize risk to public health and safety, and to ensure the long-term viability of major facilities. Major facilities are defined as those uses, such as in industries requiring separation from sensitive land uses. And I find almost all of the presentations and concerns from the public have concerned exactly that definition. And there's adjacent land users that have sensitive land uses,
Ian,
because they're in food.
Ian, we need questions.
It is a question. Has the been actually addressed?
The BPS and the MOE requirements do not consider any industries as a sensitive land use. A sensitive land use is a residential, a school, that similar use. And it doesn't account for a resident in a designated industrial area. It has to be in a designated residential area. The closest designated residential area is 1.2 kilometers away from the site.
Okay. Thank you. I'll discuss this with planning staff. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to, I guess, to staff. A number of concerns, I guess, was expressed by the public, and some of these were air quality, air pollution, traffic, and odor, which the applicant has addressed. The town did a peer review, and I think that this was a question that was asked by the public, and whether or not we have peer reviewed, and we have done so. Have we gotten all the peer review in, and if we have, do they address these issues?
Ms. Tollett.
Through you, Chair, to Board of Councillor Groves. So we just received them today. We will have to go through them and get them to the applicant, and then we'll post them on the website later this week.
Okay, thank you. Can you also tell me, I'm not sure who, is it the applicant or staff, MOECC, what role do they play in this application?
Paul?
Oh, sorry. So the Ministry of Environment doesn't play a direct role at this stage. I just wanted to actually address Mr. Sinclair's comment as well regarding Guideline D6. So the Ministry of the Environment published Guideline D6 a while ago, and I do want to just emphasize that Guideline D6 was specifically addressed in the Air Quality Report under Section 2, and it did do the minimum separation distances and areas of potential influence, so it's all documented in our report. So that's the extent currently of the Ministry of the Environment's direct involvement. But the studies that both the air quality study and the noise study use the methodologies and the standards that are set by the Ministry of Environment to do our studies. If zoning is approved for this particular site, then our studies, both the air quality study and the noise study, will be submitted to the Ministry of Environment for their review and approval. So the plant can't operate until, if zoning is provided, then the next step is to go for ministry approval, and the plant still cannot operate without that receiving that ministry approval.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Just to clarify, even if the town gives the zoning an OP designation, we still need that approval from MOE before the plant can operate.
Okay. Councillor Downey.
Thank you. Through you, Chair DeBoer. Through the presentation, you mentioned the number of other facilities like this in Ontario being 130. How does this particular site stack up in comparison in terms of size? Like, obviously, there's going to be larger or smaller, that type of thing. Where would you say that it is in kind of the range?
So it's from a capacity perspective, or what we've modeled as its capacity and what its design capacity is, it's on the medium to large side. There are smaller plants. I think one of the residents mentioned a plant at 100,000 tons per year. That's a smaller plant. This is a sort of a medium, average medium towards large, is about 300,000 to 400,000 tons per year. A very large plant is over 500,000 tons per year.
How does that compare to the site in Guelph or, say, Oakville?
So the site in Guelph is Cox Construction. So Cox Construction, its actual production is lower than what, like actual production is lower than what we have modeled as the maximum production rate. But if you actually look at their permit, they are permitted to produce more.
Okay.
So maybe a clarification as well, when we're talking about the studies that we've done, we're required by the ministry to assess the impacts of the maximum production rate of the plant. So we can't send a study to the ministry that says, well, they only intend to produce 200,000 tons a year, but the plant capacity is 400,000 tons per year, so we must assess the maximum of that plant. So just to clarify that there are many plants in Ontario that have significant capacities, 300,000, 400,000 tons per year, but if you actually look at their production rates, they're quite a bit less than that on an annual basis. So they may, on an hour-to-hour basis, occasionally hit that maximum hourly production rate, but it's very rare for a plant to operate at its maximum hourly production rate for 12 or 24 hours a day. It's very unusual.
Right, and I would assume that that would be driven by the market, obviously. You also touched on pre-processed or non-pre-processed material coming in. Where does that material come from? Like, as opposed to the material that would be recycled on site. I'm familiar with aggregate recycling.
So all asphalt plants use recycled material. That's recycled asphalt pavement. And so that recycled asphalt pavement comes from places that where they're pulling up the asphalt pavement. So the particular difference, as one of the questions you asked, is what's the difference between this application and other sites in Ontario? Many other sites in Ontario process the RAP. So they'll have the material come directly from the demolition site to their land, and they'll have a crushing train on site, and they'll crush that, and they'll put that into the RAP piles and then reuse that. In this particular application, they are not going to be taking unprocessed material. So they'll receive that material from an Operation Ontario that has an approved crusher that will then deliver that the recycled asphalt ready to go immediately into their process.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Councillor Rosa.
Thank you. There's been a couple of concerns that have been brought forward to my attention that I'd like to address through the chair to the applicant. There were concerns about potential plant safety. The idea that at times the need for production and meeting of deadlines, especially prior to the plant shutting down, let's say for the months of January to March, to meet those deadlines to get that work completed. There were concerns, especially at the change of season, that at times production needs and requirements supersedes safety practices. And I guess the question to make that I'm bringing forward is what measures will be taken to ensure that the plant safety and avoid any potential accidents within the plant. We've talked a lot about the impacts of the plant to the environment, to the community, and so on, but the actual production itself, sometimes, from what I understand, the peak times where we're just about to shut this plant down for the winter and we got to get the jobs completed, are there going to be measures that will ensure that we don't supersede production and jeopardize safety of the employees and people working there?
So I can't address safety because that's not my area of expertise, but what I can address is production. So when the application goes into the ministry, it will contain specific production rates that our assessments are based on, and those production rates form part of the operating permit, and they are not permitted to exceed those ones. And so as part of a regular environmental approval from the Ministry of Environment, they typically have conditions in that require record keeping of things like temperatures, production rates,
So those kinds of things. So there's records that can be inspected and checked to make sure that the production doesn't exceed what the plant applied for and assessed to be compliant.
Okay. Mayor Thompson?
I've got a couple of questions. One is how much energy does this thing consume, this plant would consume, for electricity, natural gas, and water?
So we'll get that information since Mark isn't here any longer. We'll get that information to the planning staff.
What I'm just making sure is there adequate hydro and is there adequate water?
Absolutely. We'll get you that information.
Thank you.
Okay. That's it? Councillor Kierman?
Thanks, Nick. Through you, please, to the applicant. Councillor Downey actually asked about the size and capacity of the plant. Question, please. When you spoke about air quality in the reports, how does the size of this plant relate to your report? So are those reports that you've done for your measurements taken in relationship to the size of this plant or overall in general?
So emissions are a function of capacity. So the more you produce, the more emissions you generate. So when we are estimating emissions, one of the inputs into the calculation is the maximum capacity of the plant.
So you use the worst case scenario, the maximum capacity.
Right. Yeah.
Secondly, please, you also stated that this is a medium to large facility. Does that change the scrutiny from the MOE? Is there a greater occurrence of reporting and or inspections?
Not generally. So essentially, we'll do the assessment. So a bigger plant, so two cases. So if you have a smaller plant and a bigger plant on the same size property, the emissions from the bigger plant will be more, and therefore for the same location on the same size property, the maximum concentration at the property line, what percentage of the ministry standards would be slightly higher for the bigger plant. However, the property is a very significant size. That difference between a big plant and a small plant disappears. So one thing that the ministry does do is if an application is submitted to the ministry and obviously everything is technically correct and the concentration at the property line is a fraction of the ministry standards, you know, it's less than 5% of the ministry standards, obviously the ministry is thinking, well, it's a pretty solid, you know, application. It's very, very low from an impact perspective. The ministry scrutiny increases the higher the facility is as a percent of the ministry standard. So, for example, as consultants and experience with the ministry, once we are seeing maximum concentrations at the property line, which is the highest concentration it will have, above 90% of the ministry standard, then the ministry definitely applies additional scrutiny and requires additional justification, some sensitivity analysis on the assessment.
And that's determined from your reporting back to the MOE on those?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, and seeing no further questions from Council, I want to thank everyone for coming this evening. I know it's been long, and we want to thank you for taking time to participate and showing an interest in your community. There's no further comments, so I will close the public meeting portion of this meeting tonight. We will move to the delegations, but we will take a five-minute recess to allow those that don't want to stay for the rest of the meeting to leave, and then the people that are here for the next part of the meeting can move into the room. So thank you very much for coming. Call the meeting back in order, back to order, back to whatever. And we've got two delegations tonight. Judy Mabey, read the motion for me and Sinclair, Councillor Sinclair regarding Bill 66. You have, 10 minutes.
Great. I think I'm about eight.
Eight?
Eight.
Well, I got a clock, so I'm going to hold you.
Okay, that's fine. We'll see. I can see the clock. Okay, anyway, it's past my bedtime, so I'm going to just boot through this. Good evening, Mayor Thompson and Caledon councillors and residents here in attendance.
My name is Judy Mabee, and I am here along with other residents of Bell Fountain and its environs to support the motion coming forward from Regional Councillor Ian Sinclair. Mayor Thompson is the official voice of Caledon, and as such engages in many leadership roles. And you will understand where I'm going as this progresses. On the Town of Caledon website, our mayor states that he and councillors are dedicated to protecting and promoting Caledon's interests at the region and improving the quality of life here in Caledon. Mayor Thompson is the regional representative of the Board of the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, the AMO, and the interim chair of the Rural Ontario Municipal Association. That's ROMA, advocating and providing leadership to 444 municipalities across Ontario. His committee involvements include the Audit and Risk Committee. He is the chair of the Government Relations Committee. He sits on the Greater Toronto Area Agricultural Action Committee as vice chair. He sits on the Intermunicipal Planning Subcommittee, the Peel Agricultural Advisory Working Group, the Golden Horseshoe Food and Farming Alliance, the Goods Movement Task Force as vice chair, and last but not least, the Greenlands Securement Subcommittee. He's a busy man. Our mayor has created a very expansive network of rural, agricultural, and political networking. I say this because his circle of influence is large and diverse. He has the ability to influence the outcomes of decision makers in municipalities across Ontario. Tonight, Regional Councillor Sinclair will introduce a motion to council to defeat Bill 66. This is a growing groundswell, a growing groundswell of constituents across Caledon supporting him in this endeavor. The Open for Business Act, or Bill 66, is an insidious bill. Our premier suggests it was created to promote employment and job creation in Ontario. Despite government assurances that the Greenbelt will not be affected, Bill 66 provides the ability to override the Greenbelt Act. Bill 66 does not recognize the available barren industrial lands that exist in municipalities, nor does it recognize the 38,000 people employed in the Greater Golden Horseshoe, or the $1.7 billion contributed in tax revenue for all three levels of government from farming in that area. There are 5,500 farms in the Greenbelt area that provide specialized farming support to the residents of Ontario. There is enough land in the GTA outside of the Greenbelt to support growth in Ontario beyond 2031. Schedule 10 of this bill renders ineffective 9 provincial acts and key sections of the Planning Act that protect sensitive farmland, forests, watersheds, and the Greenbelt. In the past, the Liberal Party, Conservative Party, and New Democrats demonstrated a new word, tripartisanship, to develop these acts to secure Ontario's healthy future. Schedule 10 also provides unthinkable exemptions to source water protection, allowing development to bypass the Clean Water Act and putting our drinking water at risk. According to Bill 66, the government professes there is a need for new industrial development in Ontario. This, on the coattails of the industrial concept, is an opportunity for developers to package commercial and residential uses into the application without informing residents. Schedule 10 removes public notice, public consultation, and the ability to appeal these decisions. Democratic process, as we know it now, pertaining to development will cease to exist if this bill passes. Our provincial government introduced the Open for Business Bill, knowing Schedule 10 could undermine the Greenbelt and zoning. Downloading industrial development to municipalities and minimizing red tape, as they put it, will have a direct impact on our lands and water. So far, five municipalities have submitted resolutions to the province declaring lack of support for Bill 66. These municipalities are Ajax, Oakville, Burlington, Waterloo, and Mono. Caledon can start this process by supporting Councillor Sinclair's motion tonight. The past mayor of Ajax informed us that Bill 66 was going to be a topic of discussion at the recent mayor's meeting held on January 14th. It would be our expectation that you, Mayor Thompson, influence the attendees wisely not to support this bill. The existing acts and policies that govern development in Ontario are not broken. Your constituents need to believe our Caledon Council is focused on support of our valued and protected natural resources. The Open for Business Act needs to be defeated. Thank you for your time. And I was close. Oh, thank you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Connors?
Thank you. I'm here tonight on behalf of numerous community organizations supporting Councillor Sinclair's motion. The Palgrave Residents Association, CAMP, and Pitt Sense, as well as my own organization, the Canadian Network for Respiratory Care. When I first read about the bill, 66, this was an issue that really made me upset. It was one that I thought, gosh, I could be down there protesting at Queen's Park, handcuffing myself to the front entranceway. Not really going to do that, but that's how upset I was. And I'm going to speak to why. The town of Caledon and other municipalities already have a tool that they could use to fast-track development, the Ministerial Zoning Order, or MZO. And we all know that this is a tool that the town is very familiar with and not afraid to use. Bill 66 is an MZO on steroids. Specifically, Section 10 of Bill 66 is designed to allow municipalities to pass open for business bylaws that completely bypass public notice and offer no ability for appeal. Why is the government so afraid to allow the public to comment on large projects that have potential environmental impacts? We already have a new local planning appeal tribunal that seriously curtails the ability of any members of the public to launch appeals, a process that is already prohibitively expensive for any community groups, as most of us already know who have spent thousands of dollars on expensive appeals. LPAT was supposed to eliminate 80% of the former volume of OMB appeals. So why is Bill 66 necessary? The government says that we need this open for business bylaw to build places where Ontarians can be employed, like factories, and we have a lot of those in Caledon as well. However, the fine print is, and I'm reading from the Stop Bill 66 for this one section, is that the primary use is the development, while commercial and residential uses can be secondary use. For a town our size, under 250,000 in population, we only need 50 jobs to implement Section 10 of Bill 66 and create an open for business bylaw. Once that requirement is met, then commercial and residential uses can be packaged into the application. This gives developers a large gray area where they can lobby this for this bylaw in the name of employment, but also to push a sprawl agenda into the background. The Greenbelt provides $3.2 billion annually in services for the region, such as recreational activities and flood protection. It was created in 2005 to limit rapid urban sprawl and protect our environmentally sensitive land and farmland. And I'm going to say it again because you've all heard me say this, but it is the crime of our generation that we are not doing more to protect our farmland. Our children and grandchildren are going to ask us in the future why we stood by and did nothing while our scarce, precious remaining farmland was destroyed. And for what? Sprawl, corporate greed, so that developers can get even wealthier for 50 minimum wage factory jobs. As the previous speaker said, since the introduction of Bill 66, many municipalities, municipal councils and planners, Sudbury, Waterloo, Kitchener, Wilmot, Guelph, Aurora, Burlington, Bradford, Mulmer, Ajax, Wellesley, Pooslinch, Stouffville, Barrie, Oakville, Hamilton, Orangeville last night, Toronto, have expressed serious concerns about Bill 66, and many of them have passed resolutions opposing this bill. Given the news today about the announcement about the Upper and Lower Tio review from the government, I think it's really important that all municipalities stand together to express to this provincial government that local municipalities deserve the right to have say over their own affairs. For example, the Oak Ridges Marine Act requires that planning decisions conform with the Oak Ridges Marine Conservation Plan. The Oak Ridges Marine Conservation Plan recognizes the importance of protecting the marine as it is the headwaters for 64 rivers or streams, biodiversity, and groundwaters, and is a source of drinking water for 250,000 people, many of us here who are on groundwater wells and rely on that for our drinking water. By not having to conform to many environmental laws, applying to open for business planning bylaws, the community's interest in requirements that provide for providing fresh water and ecological health over land uses will not be respected. Contrary to the government's contention that Bill 66 cuts regulations that are out of date, almost all the laws and policies affected were recently passed or updated with extensive public consultation, including the Clean Water Act, the Toxic Reduction Act, the Green Lakes Protection Act, and the Provincial Policy Statement. Almost all of this legislation arose out of a need, including the Clean Water Act that came out of the tragedy at Walkerton, which nobody wants to see happen. Again, municipal plans themselves are updated every 5 to 10 years. This bill is good for big business, as the bottom line is that it will save them time and money. And make no mistake, this bill is all about money. It is not for the people. I would like to turn to our U.S. neighbors for a moment to build a parallel. In the United States, the three wealthiest Americans, Jeff Bezos, our new Amazon resident here, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, own more wealth than the bottom half of Americans combined, three individuals. Ontario and Caledon do not need to contribute to this gross inequity. These large employers can afford to take the time, do the proper studies, and consult with the public if they want to put employment here. Jimmy Carter, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, recently said that the U.S. is now an oligarchy, where a small group of people are in control, in which an unlimited political, this is his quote, unlimited political bribery has created a complete subversion of our political system as a payoff to major contributors. This bill moves us further towards oligarchy and away from democracy. This is not a partisan issue. I do know that most of the councillors up here are members of the Conservative Party. You can be a conservative and care about the environment. And I'm quoting the past head of the Ontario Conservative Party and your colleague on the Brampton Council, because I'm halfway through reading his book right now. And you can lobby your own party about what's wrong with this bill. And this is not just about protecting the environment. Bill 66 is an insidious and draconian law that has no place in a civil society. It would give the voting majority of town councillors the right to secretly sweep aside provincial policy, municipal zoning, as well as several environmental protections, and decide without public notification or right of appeal to allow a factory to be placed anywhere, next to a kindergarten, in the town's source water protection zone, across from the hospital, or in the middle of your neighborhood. This is not a NIMBY issue. It's about protecting everyone's neighbor and a neighborhood. And I'm going to say, when I read the town report, you can't be a little bit pregnant. You can't say, oh, well, we're going to use just some parts of the bill, but we're going to make sure we don't damage, you know, the environment or the water. We know that matters, but it's really important, and we're going to get jobs from this. If you decide to circumvent the public's democratic right to have a say in the public process, you can't undo that. It's either go down that road or don't go down that road. You can't do it halfway. This is about protecting the community that we all love. It's about standing up for our health and safety, ensuring that the water we drink will continue to be safe, the air that we breathe won't make us sick, and that we can feed ourselves. And mostly this is about, the last time I checked, we lived in a democracy, and Caledon is part of that democracy. And if you're going to make major planning decisions that impact our lives, that the public has a say in that process. I urge Councillor to vote in favor of Councillor Sinclair's motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Connors. Bill 66, first reading, Schedule 10, Planning Act, provides for a special land use zoning approval under Section 34.1 of the Planning Act, and whereas the ERO number 013-4125 articulates the intention for Section 3.34.1 to be used in circumstances where there is major employment and economic growth opportunities, and whereas Schedule 10 of Bill 66 sets aside key sections of the Planning Act and 9 provincial acts important for consideration for protection of the environment, health and safety, and community viability of people. And whereas Section 10 of Bill 66 provides for no public notice, no public consultation, and no appeal of decisions made under Section 34.1 of the Planning Act. And whereas support for and the use of Section 10 of Bill 66 would debase the rationale for the official plan, the zoning bylaw, site plan control, and long-term planning in Caledon. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Town of Caledon does not support Schedule 10, of Bill 66, as the town has a robust official plan, zoning bylaw, site plan control, which have been proven to be effective for approving major employment and economic growth opportunities, and that the absence of notice and consultation and appeal are contrary to democracy. And seconder, you seconder?
Yep.
Annette Groves seconded. And we have Councillor Sinclair asked for it to be held, so you get to speak first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to review a little bit of the contents of Bill 66, Schedule 10, dealing with the Planning Act. And there seems to be a major clawback by the provincial government and the Minister of Municipal Affairs taking back approval for bylaws presumably being open for business. And somehow the municipality has to negotiate with some landowner or proponent and come up with a proposal and then send it off to the minister for approval. Right now, approvals of official plan amendments and rezoning bylaws are approved by regional council. So it's a real clawback. Section here, non-applicable of listed provisions, 6. The following provisions do not apply to an open for business planning bylaw. And this goes far beyond the Greenbelt plan. So subsection 3 of the Planning Act deals with the policy statements and provincial plans. And the reading in the Act requires a decision of council to be consistent with the policy statements and shall conform with provincial plans. Provincial policy statements no longer apply or will on approval of Bill 6. Section 24 of the Planning Act is set aside. It deals with appeals, the right of appeal, all or part of a decision of council. So it lists there who can appeal at this point. None of them can appeal. No public body can appeal. The region appeal can't appeal. Subsections 34, subsections 10 through 34 are not applying. The 34 subsection deals with the action by approval authority who may deal with and modify decisions of Caledon Council, in this case Peel. They are now set aside. Section 36 of the Planning Act deals with appeals to the local planning and appeal tribunal. No appeals to that body are allowed. Section 37 of the Planning Act deals with contents of the notice for an appeal to the local appeal tribunal. That does not apply. Now we get into the other legislation. Section 39 of the Clean Water Act deals with the effect of the plan. It requires a decision that relates to the source protection area shall conform with the significant threat policies. And B, have regard to other policies set out in the source protection plan. They're set aside, and the Clean Water Act has become so much dross. Section 20 of the Great Lakes Protection Act. That deals with the effect of the initiatives. And again, it says a decision under the Planning Act or the Condominium Act made by a municipal council that relates to the area which an initiative shall apply to protect the Great Lakes does not apply. Once again, Great Lakes do not apply. Section 7 of the Greenbelt Act does not apply. That deals with a decision made under the Ontario Planning and Development Act, Planning Act, or Condominium Act shall conform with the Greenbelt Plan. I think this is what causes most people alarm. The Green Belt Plan effectively becomes so much dross. Section 6 of the Lake Simcoe Protection Act. Again, a corner of Caledon has the Holland River in it, so we're a little bit part of that. And it does not apply. The decision does not have to conform with the designated policy set out in the Lake Simcoe Protection Plan. And so it keeps going. Section subsection 31.4 of the Metrolinks Act, which is dealing with major transportation issues, you can set those aside and they do not apply. Section 7 of the Oak Ridges Marine Conservation Act does not apply. That means a decision shall conform with the Oak Ridges Marine Conservation Plan does not apply. Section 13 of the Ontario Planning and Development Act. Again, it says no municipality shall undertake any public work that conflicts with the plan. And no municipality shall pass a bylaw for any purpose that conflicts with the plan. This is set aside. Subsection 14, brackets 1 of the Places to Grow Act. A decision under the growth plan shall conform with the growth plan. Okay? Not apply. Then we get into waste. Section 12 of the Resource Recovery and Circular Economy Act does not apply. That means the entire act does not apply. Part of the Aurelia offense also deals with notice. And Section 11 says no notice or hearing is required prior to the passing of an open for business planning bylaw, but the municipality shall give notice of the bylaw within 3 days of the passing thereof to the minister in the prescribed manner, and within 30 days of the passing thereto of any person's public bodies the municipality considers proper in such manner as the municipality considers proper. It gives notice completely discretionary to the municipality. So none of those white 4x4 sheets of plywood with black lettering indicating to people there's an application for a change in land use are required. No advertisements, no public information meetings, as some of you witnessed tonight. Well, that's really what is causing the offense here. So Bill 66 accomplishes two things. It sets aside every piece of legislation designed to protect and enhance the public good. And two, it sets aside the rule of law in terms of notice and appeal in land use. It's reckless. So that's about it.
Thank you. We do have a list of speakers, and we're going to start with Mayor Thompson.
Well, first of all, I will thank Judy for your comments tonight. And yes, this is something that has been a real major concern through rural Ontario, especially in the greater Toronto area, that's especially for some municipalities been greenbelted, and some of their employment lands have been greenbelted. They have no growth, no ability to create revenue, and they're in bad financial shape. So I can see the reason for this. This was asked through the Crombie Report. Hazel McCallion did ask this for the municipalities that were strictly just greenbelted to give them some hope and some help. Judy, you were talking about land outside of this area, farmland. Farmland is farmland is farmland, and 80% of the food produced in Ontario is west of Highway 400. The last census, Halton and Peel combined, don't even make 0.25% of the food that's produced. But my concern is with the Green Belt created leapfrogging, because what it was, the Green Belt was designed, and this is what the province will tell you. This is, as you say, I do work with staff. I try to influence to help my farm community and people that are trying to operate within the Green Belt. The problem is the planners down there do not understand agriculture, nor do they understand farming. They understand wetlands. Significant areas. Unfortunately, the mistake should have been a food belt for all the agricultural land across Ontario and had all of it in it, and then do the justifications if there ever needed to be growth. But we're here, we got a province that's going to come down with 20 more similar bills to this that are going to be released in the next, my understanding, in the next 7 weeks. So we're going to be extremely busy with what's coming at us. I think it's irresponsible for Caledon, with 80% of our land that's protected. We have no need to open up any greenbelt land. We have lots of land for future growth and development over the next 100 years. But having said that, I think we need to report back to the next bill with our comments. If we opt out, we've taken away our voice and our stance. Then all of a sudden, now you have the province making the decisions for us. I rather embrace these tools that they have given us, because we're the caretakers of Caledon. And here's my feeling. I've always said Caledon planned Caledon's way. And I would rather have control of it than having the province making the decisions for us, because I have seen the province making decisions for us without giving us input. Talking to the GTA mayors today down in Toronto, it was pretty concise, and I hear that Judy said Ajax opted out, but boy, the mayor sure didn't feel good about it. He was saying that it was agreeing with some of us. I know we all didn't agree. We all have difference of opinions. I know the mayor of Burlington sure had her opinion, and that's fine. We all got to be respectful. But my attitude is, I think it's more important that we control our own destiny. My accountability is the public. And if I'm not doing the job, I can tell you what the answer will be really quick. And I think I've seen too much where the province has had control with little regard for what we're about and what we're trying to do with agriculture. We've had a number of businesses and industries that we're trying to help. I've seen the challenges that we've had to jump through hurdles with Spiritry and Heatherly and different other ones that are trying to make a living, and all the extra costs that they've had to incur. We want to brace agriculture. We want to keep what we have and then have it grow and flourish. And it's been extremely hard. We've had two new dairy farms get expanded in the Greenbelt in the last little while. And one's the current president of the Peel Federation of Agriculture. And he went to school with another fellow that's in Wellington County. And it's the same identical barn. And the processes and the layers of legislation that we had to go through versus what his partner went through. His friend got his permit in a matter of 6 weeks. It was a year and a bit before he could get clearance to get his barn built. And that's unfortunate. And so there's things like this that we need to clean up and clarify. But to me, I think it's a lot better in the hands of us right now. I think our staff have given our really good report back. And I think we need to be engaged, try to make the changes, because if we opt out now, we've given up our rights, and now we're going to have this government telling us how we do things. And that's a real concern that I have. And I think I have a lot more faith in the people around here that care and love Caledon so much. And along with a lot of the other municipalities, we feel all the same way. Water is important for the heart and lungs of Peel Region. And I think it's extremely important. And I know a lot of times it's great. I know we read with, and to me is, I think we have to stick with the hard science and try to make the right decision. And at this point, that's where I'm wrestling with the bold. What Councillor Sinclair is asking tonight, I think is premature. I think it's irresponsible of us as elected officials.
Settle down. Order, please. Order. Councillor Groves, you finished? Councillor Groves?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I chose to support and second Councillor Sinclair's motion because I respectfully disagree with the mayor. I don't think it's premature at all. I think that we need to take the lead. The province is going to plan for us if we don't reject this bill, because my understanding of the process is the municipality can do what they do, bring the lands in,
And at the end of the day, the minister has the final say. So they are going to plan it for us, whether we like it or not. So I say we reject the bill. I have a number of concerns, and some of the concerns that I have is Bill 66 overrides transparency in government, environmental protection. It does not allow the public to have input. I have a concern about that. It allows council to make decisions on applications behind closed doors. We've had over the years a number of our residents express these concerns about applications being made behind closed doors, and this is what Bill 66 does. Region Appeal, I know that our staff at the Region Appeal, they have some huge concerns with Bill 66. They provide regional services. They provide water and wastewater for us. And Region Appeal folks are in a $1.6 billion shortfall in infrastructure. The problem that I have with this bill, if the local municipality decides to bring lands in, who's going to service it? Region Appeal's not going to service it if they don't feel that they can service it, or if it's financially not feasible for them to do so, they will not. I'm concerned about how Bill 66 affects climate change, because I think it does. I don't think Caledon needs to support Bill 66. We have 25,000 acres of white belt land. That's a lot of land for development, so we're not short of developable land. So we really don't need to rush in and support Bill 66, because we got lots of land that we can develop over the next 100 years. I think we should support, join in with the other municipalities that have supported this, and Agila, Orangeville, Collingwood, Aurora, Burlington, Oakville, Hamilton, Milton, Guelph, and Waterloo region. I do think that we should join those folks and say no to the province, I can tell you. And I think, Cheryl, you said it well. This is a bill on steroids. We dealt with this in with Canadian Tire. It was an MZO, no public consultation, no public input. So I will be supporting Councillor Sinclair's motion, because I think we need to send a clear message to the province that we are in control of our planning. We don't need the minister to plan our community. Thank you.
Okay, and it finished, Annette?
Yes.
Councillor Downey?
Thank you, through you, Chair DeBoer. This is difficult, and it's difficult because I think, you know, we're all in a position to say we agree or disagree or support or don't support. And the reality of it is that we all have a number of underlying concerns with Bill 66. But I'm just going to hit this from a strictly procedural angle here. This bill has hit its first reading, so we have it in draft form, and we've been asked to provide comments. If we as a municipality say right at this moment, we don't want anything to do with it, we let go of our opportunity to comment on a draft form. And then it's gone.
Order, please. Order,
so
please.
So what I'm going to say is that I believe that making that decision right at this moment is premature. And I've said this many times before, I'd rather be at the table in disagreement than not at the table at all. I think that we have a lot to offer from our staff's perspective, from our comments, from our as a municipality. 81% of our municipality is covered. I sit on Credit Valley Conservation. I sit on the Niagara Escarpment. We have a number of overlying environmental agencies, TRCA, Oak Ridges Moraine. We have all. We're a very unique municipality in that we have all of those overlying environmental plans and aspects, and I think that having the opportunity and the ability to comment on the draft is incredibly important.
Could Peggy, could you, on behalf of staff, because I know you're conducting a review and you've been speaking to the region, where is the stance on the review? And where would this motion fit with regards to the review that you guys are, the commenting that you guys are doing on the first reading for the proposed draft bill?
So through you, Chair DeBoer, I'll start and then I'll have Sylvia kind of fill in as if I miss anything. So we provide the memo. Staff have been working with the region, City of Brampton, and Mississauga to provide comments fully back to the province on this bill. The comments are due back by January 22nd, so we share some of the same concerns because it basically the bill doesn't provide any guidance. It's basically giving you it so that you can do whatever you want. It doesn't support a lot of these things, like it doesn't protect for a green belt, it doesn't protect for the water, and we realize the impacts on the public consultation and so on. So we have the same concerns that we outlined in the memo, the same concerns that Councilman St. Clair has brought up. But we do see it as they're throwing back a tool to us. So is it the municipality's role to now develop that tool that works for Caledon? Is it that we develop the bylaw that says, okay, we still want a public process. We still want to protect this. We still want to protect environmental lands. Do we develop the tool so that it works for Caledon? Or do we do that with the comments to the province so that we have that kind of open forum, because it is only the first reading. So we have to say, yes, we do have a lot of concerns with it because it doesn't protect the town at all. But what can we use the tool for? It's similar to other tools the province has passed down to us, so how do we view that? And in sharing with the region, they're kind of on the same wavelength. They're providing a report back to regional council, I think, in February, but they're still working towards comments for the January 22nd. Oh, sorry, 29th? 20th, sorry. I don't know what day it is.
Okay.
I'm sorry, and I don't know if Sylvia has anything else she wanted to add to it.
No, and just in further to the chair in response to the questions that were asked, we are working on our providing comments, as Peggy indicated, on by the 20th back to the province. And the comments that have been raised tonight through a number of the delegates are many of the concerns that we have, and we'll be expressing those back to the province. And like she said, we've been working with the region as well as Mississauga and Brampton to ensure all of our comments are somewhat similar. So, and nothing that we heard tonight hasn't already been discussed with our counterparts.
Okay. Councillor Downey, are you done? Councillor Kernan.
Thank you, Councillor DeBoer. Through you. So this is a very complex issue, everybody, as we all know. This is a complex proposal. It is a draft proposal. We all know that. And thank you, Peggy and Sylvia, for saying that our comments are going to go back. And I've had a lot of residents reach out to me about these issues. It's a hard one to understand. There's too many loopholes in it for me. I'm all about, and I can really embrace, let's reduce the red tape. But I think we can find a better way to reduce the red tape to allow some open for business without affecting our green belt. So my comments are pretty straightforward. Although it's Caledon Council, my first priority is to my ward and to Ward 1, which is a ward of villages and hamlets and farms and rural land. And I could not, in good conscience, not support Councillor Sinclair. So I also will be supporting this motion this evening.
All right, order, please. You can't applaud in the council chambers. It's not done that way.
But I do want to stress that it is complex. And, you know, there is some value in what the other councillors are saying, is that let's see how this, you know, I'd like to see I'd like to see enough people give pushback, enough municipalities give pushback, so that the province, you know, in a perfect world comes back and says, well, this isn't working. We're going to need to rejig this. That would be what I would want, you know, something in the middle. You know, and farming, you know, I think Cheryl spoke about, you know, farming and whether we're PCs or not, that doesn't mean that we don't care about our communities. Farming is a romantic idea to some people. I live in a ward of farms, and we have farmers in this room, and it's a tough life to make a living out of farming. And a lot of the farmers now want to develop their land. This will be a pushback in some of the areas. That's just a hard fact, folks, okay?
But again, it brings me back to the reason I'm sitting here. And Ward 1 is, you know, that rural area. It wouldn't be developed in. We do have some protection, even with Bill 66 in Ward 1, because we've got the NEC protection, right? But we've got the Niagara Escarpment.
Order, yes. Please.
No, it's true. Niagara Escarpment, you have to be open to take some knowledge, and you have to be open to take some information, too. So, but again, I think it's too loosey-goosey. And again, I'll just finish to say that I can't support Bill 66 whatsoever for my ward. So thank you very much.
Councillor Early.
Thanks. Loosey-goosey was my word. You took it. I don't think there's anybody in this room tonight, let alone on this table, that doesn't support Greenbelt and land. I, you know, my husband's a fourth-generation farmer. There's so many of us around here that have been part of agricultural, part of farming, part of the land. My lab is 13 years old, has never walked in a street. She's just walked on farm fields. So I clearly get, and I am so sensitive to this issue. But one of the things that I wish hadn't happened is that we just had bought ourselves a little bit more time on this motion, and I'll tell you why. Because I'd love to, first of all, see this bill go back to a tighter second reading. I'd like to see municipalities give this bill some credence and give some solid comments back as to what this minister or premier has done incorrectly in his team. And most importantly, what really concerns me when I listen to the delegations, and by the way, you both did outstanding jobs, ladies. I was very impressed. I can't imagine us ever not having a public forum on something as significant as this. We just went through the asphalt issue for 2.5 hours, and that's a good public forum. That's what we do here. That's what I've seen us do. That's what I listened and learned as I was before I was campaigning. So to me, it would be about setting significant criteria as a municipality, criteria that would always, always include the public. I can't imagine that not happening. Criteria that would protect our greenbelt, but would still allow us to have a bit of a tool in a toolkit. So I couldn't endorse this bill ever if we didn't have the control over it, and I don't have enough information right now to know that we have the control over it. So I wish, if I had a wish, that we could delay this motion, and I'm not even sure if that's possible, but that would be my wish. But I think everyone around this table wants to ensure we protect Caledon, but we just need tough and tight criteria that works for us as a community and as residents. Thank you.
Mayor Thompson.
Yeah, to come back, notwithstanding the above concerns, staff would consider the process enabling regulations similar to the inclusionary zoning, and the municipality could opt not to utilize this tool to ensure that it is not used in significant environmental or agricultural concern. In particular, the town would not support the use of this tool where it would jeopardize the protection of the Greenbelt, Oak Ridges Moraine, or impacting our drinking water. The tool is only used at the discretion of the municipality to certain prescribed criteria that are met. I would like to ask Sylvia, so that means that we can strengthen those policies even stronger to protect ourselves, correct?
Through the chair, should this bill be passed the way it is without any further refinement, it still is a tool that would be in the Planning Act that a municipality could opt not to use. And if you did decide to use it, you could put your own parameters around it. You could change the threshold for jobs. You could provide public notification. You could ensure that it's not being used in areas of environmental concern. You could say it's not in areas of greenbelt. It could be for maybe major expansions, not just major new uses. So there could be some parameters, and we would be able to bring that back forward to council to create a process for if we were going to be using these open for business tools, if it was approved the way it is proposed today.
And that's why I think it's very important that we comment back. I think it's a responsibility, and we owe that to our residents, is to comment back. What I would personally do is defer it till we know where it goes with the second and third reading. If it's not working, then we have the opportunity to opt out at that point in time. But I think at this point, instead of having a two-thirds vote bringing it back, I would really like to try to see if we can make a difference here.
So through the chair, our intent right now is to provide comments back to the province outlining many of the concerns that were raised today. We as planning staff have the same concerns and outline some of the parameters that we do support, but obviously there's serious concerns bringing this forward. So we're going to outline those in our comments back to the province, and that's what was our intent, similar to what the Region Appeal is doing in the city of Brampton.
Okay, saying no right from the bout, we've lost it, and this government's very uber sensitive to a lot of things. And as soon as we're out, they're not listening to us anymore. And I think we need to stay there to influence as much as we possibly can to protect it. So to me, that's why I think it's extremely important that we strengthen the policies to protect what we have. And to me, then letting the province have the care and control. I really rather have the control of it for ourselves. And that's why I think this is so important that we need to look at this. I know there's a lot of people with emotion, and I know you're caught up, and I know where it's important to you. But we really need to know how we can make this work for Caledon. What's our best option here? And I understand your emotion. I get it. But at the end of the day, we have to make a real good decision here for Caledon. Thanks.
Are you suggesting you wanted to defer this motion?
I would like to defer it until we can see what the response back is on the comments, if I could.
Point of
order. Refer it.
Defer it.
Defer it.
Deferral,
you can't speak.
If it's deferred, you can only speak to the motion of deferral. You can't speak to the rest of the motion. So I would keep that.
You can't speak to deferral.
No. Referral, you can't speak to. Deferral, you can.
Referring.
Point of order. Sorry. If it's a deferral, nobody else on the board can speak.
Right.
If it's a referral, then the rest of us can speak.
Correct.
Or you could just wait till the list is on and then get back on.
Yeah.
To make was if you wait till the end.
I can wait till after everybody's spoken, but I think that's where we need to go with it.
Councillor Innes.
Thank you. And my apologies, it's been a very long day, and I'm extremely under the weather, so I'm surprised I've made it this far today. This is a very sensitive issue. It's a very sensitive topic. When it first came out, instantly the first thing that came to my mind was that as councillors, especially the regional councillors around this table, we're responsible for your drinking water. We are legally responsible for your drinking water. The Clean Drinking Water Act is there not only to protect you, but to also protect us as your councillors in our responsibilities and our roles. And circumventing that is unspeakable, to be quite honest. And then the more you read and you learn about it, you start seeing things with the ORM and with the green belt and all the other issues that came forward. But as we continue to dive even further, we're starting to see that there are some opportunities where we could use it to our advantage. So I know that this is a very heated topic in Caledon. Caledon is actually the only municipality in the province of Ontario that has all four major plans reviews, that has the Oak Ridges Rain, the Greenbelt, the Niagara Escarpment, as well as multiple conservation authorities. I know that the province does look and respect Caledon in a lot of our input in environmental aspects. We have many residents who sit on many of the committees who actually helped write some of that legislation that is at that province. But there's also some problems with some of those legislations. I've sat around a table multiple times with various ministers and Mayor Thompson and Councillor DeBoer talking about issues in our own ward on trying to help farms diversify within the Oak Ridges Moraine and the settlement boundaries. We still can't get them to get around that legislation. This is a tool that might be able to help us. We've sat around that table trying to get them to allow us to have a business, be able to expand their operation so that they could thrive and be successful, a business that's been in our communities for multiple generations, and they are desperately looking for a hotel, something that our community needs and wants. And we can't get around the legislation that's permitting them to have it. Meanwhile, they're 150 meters from sewers and septics. So these are
this is potentially a tool that can help us. It's also a tool that can make those lands that are most sensitive and that do need to be protected most, it gives us an opportunity to do that. I know many of you feel that we need to automatically say no and step back, but the reality is, in my past 4 years of experience, which is not a lot compared to some of the other people in this room, it's better to be at the table and to have those conversations than to immediately throw your hands up and walk away. If you're not at the table and you're not willing to negotiate and have discussions, you're not going to be heard. So what I would suggest and what I would recommend is that I think that the motion is a little bit premature. It's very important, and we need to have those discussions and that dialogue. And I would very much like to see this motion come back once we've had further discussions. I know that Mayor Thompson and myself and some of the other members of council who will be attending a conference coming up in a couple of weeks gives us an opportunity. We have a delegation with the Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing. It's an opportunity for us to have one-on-one discussion with him and the Deputy Minister about these issues specifically. These are our opportunities. If we automatically say we're out, they're not going to listen the same way as if we go to the table saying, these are our major concerns. We need public input. We need to have protections for the Clean Water Drinking Act. We need to have protections for the Oak Ridges Moraine. We need to be at that table having those discussions. So I would support referring this motion to come back prior to royal assent being received by the province. That way we know what the full bill will include, all of the ins and outs, because right before royal assent is the bill as is. And have another fulsome discussion and make our decision based then. But I think doing it right at this very moment is sometimes a little bit too rushed. I think we need to take a step back, take a breath, take a pause, and make sure that we're making the right decision. Thank you.
So did you make that motion, or are you going to allow the other two speakers to speak?
Well, I will make there's other people that want to speak. Everybody's already spoken, but I will leave it up if Mayor Thompson wants to make the referral.
Councillor St. Clair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm interested in this notion that you can have a conversation with the Ford government. And I point out one of their first actions was to attack the Toronto Council in the middle of an election, and then when they didn't get their way, invoke the notwithstanding clause of the Constitution. If they're going to do that, they're going to do whatever they want. I think if you wait to second reading for a nice patacate comment, it's too late. It'll be cast in stone. And this notion, metaphor that sounds so nice, oh, it's a tool. Well, an adjustable wrench is a tool. It's simple. It's fit for purpose. The problem with this tool is its purpose is to set aside every piece of legislation designed to protect and enhance the public good on purpose. And secondly, it's designed to set aside the rule of law as it deals with notice and appeals, and that's offensive. Thank you.
Order. Order, please. Mayor Thompson. Turn your mic on.
I respect Councillor St. Clair, and that's looking at it from the negative side, but from the positive side, we can make this work for us. And I think this is why I think we need to push this a little bit further and do the comments that our staff have been working on, and that's why I would like to refer this motion at this point in time, because we may need to use it. And if we, let's say if it did got voted down tonight, then you need a two-thirds vote to bring it back, and I don't think that would be a good idea.
Okay, so I do have a motion to refer it back to staff, that the notice of motion, read Bill 66, be referred back to staff until after the bill receives royal assent. Do you really want to wait that long?
No. No.
Okay. So when? Prior to?
Back to the third reading. I think about Prior to the third reading.
Prior to royal assent, or prior or post the second reading? Because if it comes back to the
second reading, we'll know where we're at.
My suggestion would be is if it's post second reading, you will know whether there's any, whether he's listened or whether they've listened to any of the input that that the three municipalities, four municipalities within the region appeal have
had asked for.
And then we will ask for a report, so then it will be part of the planning. It will be part of the general meeting? No, it will be part of the planning meeting, yeah. And to do something a little bit different, can we get a sign-up sheet so that the people that are here tonight will receive notification of when that all comes? Can we just put a piece of paper out in the foyer so that we can ensure that you all know of the information and is communicated to you? Can we do that? Ethan?
We don't know.
You work on the motion? Okay.
No, you guys should show a little leadership. Instead of selling us.
Order.
I don't care. We're not taking me to jail, for Christ's sake.
To second reading. No. Okay, we're just going to take a couple minute recess here until staff gets the.
Expert on everything.
Do you have a second or Alan?
Yeah.
Councillor Downey. So moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Downey, the notice of motion regarding Bill 66 be referred back to staff and that prior to the third reading, a report be brought back to council. And then we'll clear the board. You can speak to that. I do want to also let everyone know before you leave that there will be a sign-up sheet on the desk out back, outside. To sign it so that with your email address so that we can inform you of activities with this topic, okay, so that you will know just like a planning meeting. Pardon?
We won't get consulted, so why do we need our emails? If this goes through...
No, it's not.
Yes, because we won't have any public information meetings or any...
Well, we can. I can tell you as being here as long as I have, we have always consulted a lot with the community. Pardon?
No.
Okay, we're...
Point of order. Point of order.
We're going to continue on with it. I don't believe you're correct in that, but we'll continue on with it. So, all in favor? Oh, okay. Councillor Groves?
Thank you. I will not be supporting the referral, and I made my comments earlier, and I agreed with the gentleman that left. I do think we need to take some leadership. Other municipalities, they have taken leadership, and I'm sure that they have consulted with their legal department, their staff. They have taken leadership. I think that we do need to have control over our own planning. The mayor said that, but at the end of the day, the minister is going to do this. The concern that I have is that there is no public input, and I know Councillor DeBoer, you said we would consult, but we will be in violation of that because
it clearly said. No, it does not.
Excuse me, I'm talking. It clearly says that no public input. The municipality will decide what they want to bring in They send it over to the Minister of Municipal Affairs, and there you go. Canadian Tire was a very good example of an Canadian Tire was a very good example of an MZO. No public input. It's the right for the municipality to do whatever they want to do. It trumps every process. It trumps every piece of legislation. And I think that having the PPS and all the legislation that the province has in place, it's there for a reason. It's there. The conservation authorities are there for a reason. This bill supersedes them. They have no input. I have a concern, and I really don't think that we are being premature. Other municipalities have done that, and I think that all the municipalities need to get together, send a clear message to the province of Ontario that we don't support this. Our planning is grassroots. This does not allow for grassroots planning.
So, Councillor Sinclair.
What do you want staff to do with the motion? You're referring it to staff. What do you want them to do with it?
They well, Alan? The motion is referred to staff so that they will hang on to it and bring it forward. It will come back forward once the third, prior to the third reading, is the way that the resolution of the motion is read, that prior to third reading, the motion will come back with a staff report on the position and the interpretation of what Bill 66 is the way I would read that.
So they're just going to put it in a file for a while?
Till third reading, till staff have had a chance to work with both the region and Mississauga and Brampton and other municipalities to see if they can implement and bring change to it, is the way that I would interpret the motion. Peggy wants to speak.
So through Chair DeBoer, so I'm assuming all the comments we heard today are the comments the town is going to submit of concerns related to the bill, because we want to relate those concerns into the bill before the deadline. Then once the bill gets moving through before it gets back to third reading, staff will bring back a report with whatever changes were proposed in that bill, and then a further recommendation to reconsider the motion. If we submit our comments to the province, maybe they might consider those comments in their next changes to the bill or not, but we have to try to get ahead of it. So if we can submit our comments of concerns that we had today, everything from public notice to the concerns about transparency, the concerns about the water protection and environmental features, we can put all those comments in and then bring a further report back to council when it becomes on third reading, is my interpretation of this.
So, yeah, and you will take the comments that we heard from the delegations as part of your presentation and as part of the comments that you're taking to the province, correct?
Sorry, that's correct. And we're working with the region on that same the same comments.
And then it will come back with this motion and a staff report to whether this motion will then be either modified or continue on.
Correct.
Or not be required if the changes proposed satisfy the requirements.
Correct. So if we don't supply any comments and you don't send them anything that you want changed, then they won't consider it. So we'll put in all the comments we have, concerns, so that we hope they can consider it. And then when we get to the second and third reading, before the third reading, we'll bring back the report.
Do we have the ability, and do the people here wish to submit, if they want to submit comments, is there a way or an avenue that they could submit comments after tonight?
They can submit comments directly to the province on it. Anybody can.
And can they submit comments to the town? If they submit them to the province, can they submit them to us so that they end up being part of what we also include within our comments to allow some extra weight to those same comments?
They can submit it to the town. We're hearing the same comments. We're recording everything that is concerned as well today.
Okay. So there are a number of ways to submit the information, one to the province, one through us, and they've been included in our comments and presentations to the region. What's the timelines to the region's and the town's intent to present.
So the comments are due back by January 20th, but the region is bringing back a report, I believe, February 6th is when their tentative report's coming to regional council.
They're going to be
after the deadline. So they're using some of the same comments from their staff and the same comments that we've heard tonight to consolidate to put that in towards their comment sheet, and they will supply that in their report later. They have devoted January for their budget, so they have no timelines for this.
Are we going to be able to submit comments on time?
We will.
We will. Our comments will go on time? Okay. And if we have a sign-up sheet, will those comments and the comments of the province be forwarded to anybody who wishes to have that information through the sign-up sheet?
So I'm assuming the sign-up sheet was to allow people to know when the report's coming back to council so they would get notified when the report's coming back.
My question is, do we have enough time to process the information list so that they get a copy of the comments that the town is sending to the province can also be forwarded onto that group?
Yeah. So staff and I will work on that, and we'll try to get that for the 20th. Sure.
Okay. Does those satisfy your questions, Councillor Sinclair? As far as what the intent of the resolution is? Okay.
It's a foolish resolution. Waiting for third reading, it's cast in tungsten.
Prior to third reading, it's after second reading. So it'll be after the review of if there's changes made. Councillor Kiernan.
Thank you, Councillor DeBoer. Through you, I have a question for Peggy, please. So if we send these comments through and it gets through to second reading, so the idea is then, you know, in a perfect world, then the bill comes back to us, the second draft, with potential changes. If it doesn't come back to the public with changes, are we too late then to say no, thank you? Let her answer, please.
So through Chair DeBoer to Councillor Kiernan. So my understanding is then we would say we wouldn't use the tool. So you can use the tool or not use the tool. It's almost similar to inclusionary zoning. You can have that bylaw in place so that you would use it, or you can say, no, I don't want to use it because we have concerns with it. And you know, if you want to add to it.
So you would, sorry, is that...
I'm just trying to get my head around that. So does that put us any further ahead or any further behind than we would be today?
Through you, Councillor DeBoer.
Thank you.
I don't know if it puts you any further ahead or behind. So the whole point of submitting your comments is you're hoping the province would consider those comments so they could refine the bill. If they choose not to, then council can choose to make a further stance later to say, look, we don't support the bill. And then if they further still bring forward the bill, then council can say, well, we're not choosing to activate that bylaw to bring that bill in.
Okay, so I want the people in this room to have heard that loud and clear. Okay, that's factual, that's procedural, that's what needs to be listened to. I stand by what I said. I know you're shaking your head, Sherry, but you need to listen here, please.
Hang on, we're not talking from the back of the room.
I just want the people to I think this is important. I'm still standing by, you know, supporting my regional chair for Ward 1. That hasn't changed, folks, but this is facts that need to come out, procedural and process and how this all works. I think it's important that we know this because I didn't know that. It is a complex issue. And I just wanted that clarification. Thank you, Peggy. Thank you.
Okay. And then just further that question. So if the bill does, all of our participation doesn't happen, we try to effect change, it doesn't happen, we can pass within our zoning bylaw a bylaw that says that we will not implement it. How does that work within
through the chair, it would be a provision in the Planning Act that you would just never invoke. So there's other provisions in the Planning Act today that you may choose not to. Temporary use bylaws, the Planning Act allows you to use that provision. Sometimes we use them, sometimes we don't. We don't have to use it. Right now, there's inclusionary zoning for affordable housing. We do not use that provision today. So if the bill gets passed and no comment, further comments after this first reading, the province decides we're not going to assume any more comments, it's being passed the way it is, that any municipality in Ontario does not need to invoke the use of that bill or that provision in the Planning Act. We just say it's not for us. We do not want to use that tool. It's just a tool under the Planning Act that if a municipality wants to use it, they could. If they don't, they would never have. No one would force them to. No private proponent could force a municipality, the way it's written today, to utilize that provision.
But it's there, though.
The province.
It would be there, though, that a future council, because I don't think there's a desire for this council to invoke that kind of process because it is draconian, but a future council, because it's there, could potentially utilize it.
That is correct.
So for us to not participate, we can't affect change. So if we participate, then hopefully we can affect change so that a future council doesn't have something that looks like what this draft is.
It's staff's recommendation to provide comments to the province by their due date of January 20th, similar to what Brampton, Mississauga, and the Region Appeal are doing.
Yes, to try and affect change so that we can have change within the Planning Act rather than having something that somewhere down the road a future council could turn around and implement this in its form that is interpreted here now and make use of it. And if we turn around and say we don't want it, then we're not at the table to try and discuss change and direct something different. But the bylaw or the provincial legislation would still go through, potentially go through, and it would still be there regardless. That was something we'd have to ask staff.
Based on the provisions that they're providing today, a developer could not appeal, like a private.
If as a council we chose not to use it, and a developer thought we should use it, he couldn't force us or take us to the board.
That is correct.
We couldn't be forced to use it, but a council could decide to make use of it.
Nick, can I ask a question?
Who's that? Oh, you still have the floor.
Oh, thank you. Can the province force us to use it, to implement it? Can the province force us to implement it?
Think through the way the bill is written today, it's not clear. I think we would want a legal opinion on that provision.
Thank you.
Because the bill still requires council to pass the bylaw.
Right.
So I don't know if the province could veto that. And also, what happens with ministerial zoning orders? Is that still in place? There is still some other questions for us to pursue, so the minister could pursue it that avenue if that existed.
Thank you.
So I think we need more of a legal opinion on that.
Okay. And this takes me back to it is a complex, not black and white.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of things being said and not being said in this proposed, and I'm going to say that again, proposed draft, in this draft, right? So thank you again. Thank you, Nick. I'm done.
Are you done? Okay. I think I have a bit of a full understanding, and I hope that through the questions we've been able to shed a little bit more information on where staff believe that we are, that this bill is. I, for one, am not comfortable with the way it's written, but I do think that we need to affect change because somewhere down the road, if it's going to become part of the Planning Act, we need to affect change so that we can protect and enhance the Green Belt and the Oak Ridges Moraine and ensure that they're protected for the future. As somebody who farms and protects agricultural land and have done it with my own dollar, I want to continue to make that available, and I think that's what we continue to work for. So we have a mover and a motion on the floor. That the notice of motion be referred back to staff, and that the motion, it's that prior to third reading, that report be brought back to council with this motion to review the bylaw. So moved by Councillor or Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Downey. All in favour? All opposed? Was carried. It's four to three. Doesn't have to vote. There's no tie. all in favor of the motion? That's four. And then all opposed?
Four.
Four. Oh, okay. Okay. I'm voting in favor of the motion. I thought it was three and four. Okay. The motion carries to the committee meeting or to the council meeting. The next one is the question definitions. Yeah, I know. I thought I had an odd number. Okay. Moved by Councillor Sinclair. I need a seconder. Whereas there's a substantial equestrian industry in Caledon, whereas there's no definitions in the Town of Caledon Zoning Bylaw 2006-50 as amended, dealing with various land uses and accessory uses associated with the keeping, raising, training, and teaching of teaching concerning horses, and now therefore be it resolved that staff be directed to formulate appropriate zoning definitions for equestrian facilities, arenas, stables, riding rings, exercise rings, riding trails, trailer storage, riding schools, and any other relevant term associated with an equestrian facility, and that the definitions be presented to council on June 2019 meeting. Do you have a seconder? Mayor Thompson, and any questions? Councillor Sinclair?
By way of explanation, I had canvassing during the election. People that obviously were quite wealthy had 200 acres, had lots of land and barns.
Okay, what do we
and they told me the town had refused them permission to have a riding school. That led me to review the provisions of the Oak Ridges Marine Plan, and sure enough, there's no provisions in there at all for equestrian uses whatsoever. I checked the Greenbelt Plan, the same thing, and then I looked at the Town of Caledon Zoning Bylaw, and again, there's nothing for equestrian in there. And I find that an astonishing omission. There's permissions in all these plans and zoning for agriculture, but nothing for equestrian. I think we need to address that omission because of the perverse nature of regulation. If it's not permitted, it's prohibited. So a first step, very simple, is to devise the definitions that could be used in the zoning bylaw. I understand from staff that there are some definitions connected with a very site-specific land use, the Caledon Equestrian Park, but they're limited only to that particular parcel of land. And I haven't examined those definitions to see if they're suitable to move across for other land uses, such as rural residential, the larger rural residential areas, or agriculture. So that's all this is. It's not threatening. Just pull together the definitions, and then eventually, if we move through a zoning bylaw amendments, we can deal with providing a permission for equestrian facilities, which are, by the way, rife all over the town of Caledon.
Ms. Tall?
Thank you.
Through Chair DeBoer, so I did kind of try to get in touch with Councillor St. Clair just to find out if you can give me the example of the riding school that was denied, because I'm not aware of any application that was denied. Because if it's a riding arena, it is permitted if it's an agricultural use, it would be accessory to the farm use, if it's for personal use. If it's a riding school and it's a commercial use, it's not permitted as of a right. It would require a planning process, no different than any other planning process. We do have the definition on the equestrian park. We can certainly look at definitions as far as adding an actual equestrian definition into our zoning bylaw. As council is aware, a couple years back, I think in 2017, we did a zoning bylaw amendment to align our industrial and commercial properties to match our OP. So we're in the middle of doing a housekeeping of our zoning bylaw for numerous things. We can certainly add this into our process. However, it will take a little bit of time. So I think the notice of motion, I don't see it on there, it says June. That might be a little difficult because it is additional work on top of staff's regular work. And we had a staff person that was dedicated to it last year that has left, so we have reallocated to somebody else for this year. But it's not just about adding this one definition, so we want to do this as part of a lot of housekeeping items that we have with the zoning bylaw. There is some definitions that need to be done for other than just equestrian. So if you allow us the year, we can bring that back towards the end of the year for council.
Yes, Councillor Sinclair, would you
the end of
allow
what
for
year?
A different date?
The end of what year?
This one.
If you can give me to the end of 2019, it's on staff's work plan for 2019.
Well, all this is the definitions. I'm not asking you an end of zoning bylaw yet. Just get the definitions, the working definitions.
So in order to incorporate them into the zoning bylaw, I still have to follow a public process to add them in. I wouldn't just add the definition into the zoning bylaw.
No, I'm not asking you to add it into the zoning bylaw. I'm asking you to formulate the definitions only.
I guess what he's asking for is a memo with the definitions and the information and then present it to council and then adapt it into the plan later. Correct? Okay. So I guess the question is...
Just to clarify, so just to have the definition, but I couldn't use it because it's not in the bylaw.
Yes.
But sure, we can have the definition.
I think that's what he's asking is can you provide the definitions in the form of a memo, and then at some point in time when you modify the bylaw, then you would incorporate them in that exercise.
Sure. Staff will do a memo for the next planning meeting in February. Does that work?
Okay, Ian. Very good. We do have to be done in a minute, or else we're going to have to pass the bylaw. Is there any questions on correspondence? Oh, call the question on Ian's. All in favor? Carried. Is there anything in correspondence package? It was approved on consent. So if there's no questions, this concludes the planning and development meeting. Oh, we didn't have to do this one.